And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. Tonight on the big program, going to talk a little bit about the Screwquester, what it's going to mean. I know the righties going ballistic. Oh, there's nothing. It was all fabricated. The planes aren't falling out of the sky. The border's not sifting with people. And they're right. Right now, it's not. We've still got months to go, and what's going on is these agencies who are going to see a across-the-board cut, they're using resources to try and make things stay the course, hoping that sane, rational people say, you know what, we need to stop this. We need to grow up and stop this Screwquester. We need to stop this nonsense, and we need to do what's right. Which is we need to be funding the programs that need to be, and taking a look at the things we don't need. So much to this. Also going to talk about education as we move towards the privatization and the destruction of public education. We're going to talk a little bit about what we should be doing. And over the next couple of days, we're going to be in Washington for the Occupy the DOE 2.0 to highlight the fact that, you know, the public education that I grew up with, that most of us grew up with, not there anymore. Quickly going away, moving towards a very profitable, lucrative gig for some and diminished opportunities for others. Also going to talk a little bit about Social Security and talk a little bit about, the cuts to that, and also more on the rally I was at in Charleston, West Virginia. Going to talk to a couple of people, the guy who wrote the definitive paper on what happened at Patriot Coal, Professor Bruce Rader, and his piece, Designed to Fail. And I got a number of emails from folks going, well, you know, it happened to these people. It's just, you know, it just happens. This is how things work. It's how the system's set up. As if somehow it's right. As if somehow it's just how it is. And we just have to get over it. And you know what? You know, those thousands of miners who are going to lose their health care benefits. Yeah, well, you know, hey, tough luck. Should have saved more. I heard that when someone said that. They should have saved more. Yeah, these weren't high-paying gigs to begin with. And I sit and I think about, you know, some of the responses that I got to this. And it comes back to 30 years of propaganda from the radical right. 30 years of this, what's best for corporations are somehow good for the rest of us. I'm still trying to find how this is a good thing for the rest of us. How it is that one of the biggest coal companies in the country is able to set up a shell corporation, undercapitalize it, and then saddle it with massive amounts of debt. How that's a good thing for the country. I understand how it's a good thing for the parent company. I do. I get how the main company, the big one, Peabody or Arch, I understand how setting up these shell companies is good for them. I get it. They've sheltered themselves from the liabilities, pushed it off onto somebody else. Not your problem. Not ours anymore. I get how it's good for them. But how's it good for the workers? How's it good for 90% of those affected by the bankruptcy write-off, never worked for Patriot Coal, never did anything for them. They were just, that's where it ended up. That's where the liability ended up, and guess what? It's now gone. Gone. It's going to be gone. And, you know, and I don't see, I know the politicians on Monday talked of how they were going to stop it, and they're introducing legislation and all of this stuff, you know, to make them, hold them. I don't see it. Because this has happened time and time again. And I guess that the different part of this, and why this is a little bit different, is, you know what, there are people in the streets. There are thousands of people saying, no, we're not going to let you do this. We're going to fight you. We're going to spend the resource. We're going to spend the time and the energy to get out in the streets and activate and inform people. You know, I had a conversation today with a guy who said, yeah, you know, I worked for years for this company, and one day they went belly up. Everything that I thought I was saving for retirement basically vanished. It's over. It's done. So that responsibility that this company had to me, because, you know, I fulfilled my end of the responsibility. I fulfilled my end of the pact, which was to work my hardest and do my best and to help create and build this company so that it would be sustainable and it would turn a profit and all of those things that they tell us. But in the end, well, in the end, they got it in the end. which means all those years, all that dedication out the window. So I ask you, and think about this from a very personal perspective, because, you know, one of the signs that I saw at the rally is, are you next? And are you next? Am I next? Is this something that we're going to be faced with in the years to come? Because, you know, we've seen it time and time again. And I read a book not too long ago about it was called Retirement Heist. And it went into exactly how these big companies, how they shirked their pension responsibilities, how they've used these shell corporations and they've sold them. And the one example they gave was, you know, one of the big telecom companies set up a subsidiary. And they saddled it with all the pension obligation, all the health care, with all the retiree health care, all that stuff. Again, like this, undercapitalized it, saddled it with debt, and spun it off. And there it went, out floating on its own. Workers and retirees and people who never worked for that company, their future, their life's work, right there. And I've been saying this is nothing new. This is just the latest in a line of this stuff happening. So the question is, are you next? And if you are, will we know about it? The reason I know about this is, well, I know a lot of labor people. This is an important issue to labor people because these are their members. These are their brothers and sisters and their neighbors and coworkers. When it happens to you, will anybody be there to pay attention? Will anyone be there to care? Because I was looking at the mainstream media. Did you see it on your local TV? Did you hear it on other than this program? Did you hear it anywhere else? That there were 7,000 to 10,000 people marching in the street on Monday saying we're not going to allow corporations to screw us like they're doing? Of course not. Because the big corporations own the media. And why would we burden you with the knowledge that someone else is getting screwed and that you would have something in common with them? I mean, because from my perspective, they've spent so much time and energy and so much money on dividing us that something like this that I think should be a uniting force, something that pulls us all together and says, you know what? We're not going to be next. We're going to protect the least among us. We're going to protect the most vulnerable. And look, I was in that auditorium with those miners. A lot of these folks, the retirees, they are the most vulnerable right now because their bodies are broken. Their health is deteriorating. And the only thing that they can do right now is to take to the streets and to say no more and to put pressure where we can. But it brings me back to this idea, you know, how much more business friendly do we have to get? How much more business friendly can we be where you've now made an agreement that you're no longer willing or able, I should just say willing, that you're no longer willing to uphold? Because I would say the biggest coal company in the country who's extremely profitable, I would think that they have the ability to honor their promise to those workers. I would argue that they have the ability, they just have created an environment where they don't have to. And they don't live in the same neighborhood, they don't talk to the same people. So it's just those, not even people anymore so much. And you know, we hear an awful lot about, you know, about values, we hear an awful lot about community, but does it really matter much anymore? I mean, I look at this and we keep hearing, capitalism is all this wonderful stuff. But the truth of the matter is without being able to hold these companies accountable, without making them responsible for what they do, what are you setting up? Are we setting up a situation where they're immune? Because we're seeing these big companies now who evidently have person rights. They're just like you and me. They're people. Are we setting up a superhuman, someone who can't be killed, can't be jailed, and can't be held accountable? And you hear an awful lot about, you know, free market capitalism. Is this the free market? Is the free market one in which we allow companies to walk away from their responsibility and still keep all their stuff? Because if that's what a person can do, if that's what a corporate person can do, and still keep all of their assets and be protected from everyone, because this is what we've done with our bankruptcy laws. We've said, well, you're going to be able to keep your property, and you'll be able to keep stuff, and you'll be able to work your way out of it. Don't worry about it. And you can shirk all of those responsibility to those workers. What about you and me? What can we do? Can we sign a contract and say, you know what, I know I signed the contract for the mortgage, and I know I said I was going to pay you, but you know what, I don't feel like it. And there's some legal wrangling that I'm gonna try and work for so that I don't have to pay. Because that's what they've done with this. And look, I'm someone who believes in the bankruptcy laws when needed. Look, you want people to go out and take risks. You want people to try and invent the next whatever. You want that willingness to try, to put yourself out there and make a go of it without having to worry about, am I going to end up in abject poverty? Look, I understand. You go, hey, look, you tried, it didn't work, we're going to protect you to a certain point. But in a situation like this where you have set up a company specifically to take the nosedive, specifically to go under so that, well, your costs go along with it, there's something wrong with that. And for me, the bigger part of this is, and I go back to the, years and years of all of this, why is it that we seem hell-bent on allowing corporations to hold our pensions? Why is it that we seem hell-bent on allowing these corporations to hold our health care? Why are we so beholden to the corporate form? And I've always advocated for saying, look, give me the hour, give me the wage, and let's figure out how, either through our government or through our unions, to say, you know what, we're going to collectively come together and we're going to invest in our own pension or in our own health care and take the employer out of it. I've been a fan of saying, okay, look, we're going to make Social Security something that all workers pay into a certain percent and have it to be an actual living wage in retirement so that you have that defined security. And look, if you want to save a little bit extra above and beyond, that's on you. But our Social Security net will be a living wage in your retirement so that you're not retiring to poverty and that we're not losing money in the economy. Because understand, when people go into retirement, you don't want them living in poverty because you don't want to lose the consumer. That's the other part of this. And the healthcare thing's always blown my mind. How it is we've decided that, somehow the benevolent corporation, they're the best one to get us healthcare. Nonsense. Healthcare should be portable, much like pensions. I've always been a firm believer in that. Shouldn't be tied to one employer, because I know too many people. They're stuck in the job they're in because that's where their pension's at and that's where their healthcare's at. They hate the job, hate the people they work for, but that's where their pension's at, and they can't move. And there's part of me that says if we had a system where you weren't tied because of healthcare and other things, you might have a better work environment, which is where I agree with a lot of the capitalist ideas. Understand, they're just ideas. The model I get, the practice, not so much. And what we're seeing right in this case, there's no such thing as free market capitalism in this country. There's a bunch of people who call themselves capitalists who have figured out how to rig and game the system. There's a lot of that. But not so much on the pure capitalism, which is you make a bet and you lose, you actually lose. What we've got now is a system where you make a bet and, we'll have an insurance company insure it back with federal guarantee. Is that right? And I don't believe that it is. Anyway, going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Bruce Rader, professor at Temple University, about his piece, Designed to Fail. Also going to talk a little bit about the event on Monday night. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. And take your money. All they want to do is get up. And take your money.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
Responding to the Atlanta schools cheating scandal, American Federation of Teachers President Randy Weingarten and Georgia Federation of Teachers President Verdalia Turner say the teachers union doesn't condone cheating under any circumstances. Weingarten says it was the Georgia Federation of Teachers that first blew the whistle on the cheating on tests that has led to criminal indictments of 35 public school educators in Atlanta. Weingarten says standardized testing too often dominates everything else in public education today, and we need to move our schools from an overemphasis on these tests to truly rich and well-rounded curriculums deeply rooted in real education and learning. In Chicago Tuesday, hundreds of seniors, their families, and allies kicked off a Scrap the Cap campaign calling for an end to the Social Security income tax cap. The seniors did a song and dance routine using noisemakers filled with bottle caps, lifting the cap and applying the Social Security FICA tax to incomes above $113,700 would strengthen the Social Security system without cutting it. The Scrap the Cap shuffle was done at a rally attended by Congressman Danny Davis and Mike Quigley in Chicago's Federal Plaza on Tuesday. The seniors say any cuts to Social Security are unacceptable. In Janesville, Wisconsin on Thursday, U.S. Representative Mark Pocan is joining AFSCME, the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, Every Child Matters, the Children's Leadership Council, and the Alliance for Retired Americans to present a united front against the Ryan budget. Petitions protesting the privatization of Medicare and the slashing of budgets for social safety net programs will be delivered to U.S. Representative Paul Ryan's office. Representative Pocan represents part of Janesville and sits on the House Budget Committee with Ryan. Chinese workers enslaved during World War II by Japan continue to seek retribution. Jesse Russell reports.
Families of Chinese workers who were enslaved by Japan's Mitsubishi Corporation during World War II may finally have a day in court. The families are calling on the company to pay the equivalent of $16,130 per worker and erect a monument in Japan. More than 40,000 Chinese were abducted during the war and forced to work for Japan. Mitsubishi enslaved nearly 4,000 of those abducted. A number of groups have formed over the years trying to represent the workers or families of the workers. The newest group is seeking to bring cohesion between the various groups representing families with a clear and unified demand for compensation.
A Bloomberg News survey of economists is projecting that employers hired 199,000 workers in March, following a strong February when 236,000 new workers were hired. Official Labor Department numbers on jobs will be released on April 5th.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Rebuilding America.
Hello, Detroit. Auto worker, let me thank you for your time. You work a 40-hour week for a living. Let's send it on.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, therickssmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. So on Monday, I was in Charleston, West Virginia for the big mine workers rally. And, you know, the question that keeps popping into my head is the one they asked, are you next? Who's next? We've seen for the last 30 years this assault, this destruction of people's pensions. We've seen the retirement security of many stolen away, especially in the private sector. I do see that happening soon in the public sector. But here to help talk about what's going on at Patriot Coal and this whole situation that these big coal barons set up, I've got Professor Bruce Rader. He's an assistant professor of finance at Temple University. Professor, thanks for taking time for me.
Yes.
You know, I was in Charleston on Monday, and you talk to these people who worked their entire lives, the broken backs, broken bodies, lungs that are shot. They thought they were going to get health care in their old age, and now you've got this company who, it appears to me, was set up specifically to destroy that health care that these retirees were supposed to get.
I agree. It's basically a transfer of costs, and I think it generally goes to the general public if you read what I said in the paper. And we see a tremendous amount of what I call corporate socialism occurring, which means that the public sector, public sector and the private sector are moving the costs to another group. In other words, the private sector is moving them through coal for this to the general public. And that presents a problem to me.
I think it presents a problem for a lot of people because it's you know, I heard during, you know, the 2010 Tea Party Revolution, everybody talking about redistribution of wealth. This is a massive redistribution of wealth.
Well, there's always been a redistribution of wealth. It generally doesn't move downward. It generally moves upward. And if you look with the tax code and changes that have occurred over the past 10, 20 years, as you're talking about, they made it more viable for companies to transfer costs, made viable for management of companies making more and more money.
So help walk me through this, because, you know, as I read about this Patriot Coal Company, the one that's going through bankruptcy right now, where did this thing come from? I understand it was a spinoff. It was something created out of whole cloth from one of the country's largest coal companies, Peabody Coal. Explain to me how this happened.
Well, it is a very simple idea. What you do is you say, okay, we have a company, a subsidiary called Patriot Coal, and we're going to spin it off. So what we're going to do is we're going to put in a bunch of liabilities. And in this case, they put about 40% of their health care liabilities, all of their miners, into this one company and financed it with about, I think it was 12 or 13% of the assets of the company. So you can see from a point of view of a shareholder, because it was done in kind of an interesting and unique way, it was done by doing the spinoff was done as a dividend.
Okay.
So if you had 10 shares of Peabody Energy, you got one share in Patriot. So you have the same assets, but you've limited your liability on part of those assets.
So basically, this was just a gimmick then?
In my opinion, it was, because if you look at the initial, what they initially did with the company, they downloaded very little equity. They didn't download any debt from the main company to that. Most of it was liabilities that were owned to workers.
I read something interesting in your piece that something like 90% of the retirees never worked for Patriot Coal that were covered by this health insurance. Explain that to me.
Well, basically what Peabody did was they, as I said, they moved all the pension and medical benefits into Patriot and spun it off.
But how is that possible? If you never worked for this company, how is it possible that you end up then getting your health care through them when the other one was the one that you worked for?
Well, that's what you can do legally. There's a big problem between morally and legally in this country.
Okay.
And most people want you to deal with them in a moral manner. I'm sure the people from Peabody want everybody to deal with them in a moral manner. But most people want to deal with other people in a legal manner. What can I get away with through the law?
That's an excellent distinction, because what you can get away with legally is not always right.
Right, that's exactly it. You know, lawyers have a way of doing things, and we're a country of laws. But laws can be manipulated, and laws can be put on the books to benefit certain groups.
And in this case, it's certainly not these miners that I talked with. And, you know, the number of them that I had an opportunity to talk with, a bunch of folks there, and, you know, they don't know what they're going to do if they lose their health care. They don't know what their families are going to do. And I talked to a number of kids who go, you know, if dad loses this, who knows? Maybe there's no oxygen for his lungs. Maybe there's no food. That's not a choice that these guys should have to make.
Well, I agree 100%. The funny part about it is one of the reasons I wrote the piece originally, because my grandfather was a coal miner. He worked in the mines for 40 years. So, and he didn't have any of those benefits. So when he finished after 40 years from the time he was 12, he ended up having to work in another place. And then when he was older, he was just a broken man. He had black lung and a bunch of other problems.
And then who ends up, and the part of me that says, you know, then that ends up on the back of the taxpayer, which is why, you know, it's easy, I guess, for some to go, wow, these are just, you know, some West Virginia coal miners or some Kentucky coal miners. It doesn't affect us. It doesn't affect me. But I take the mindset that we're all in the pot together, you know, and while it may be these folks are going after right now, eventually it's going to be all of us.
Well, the problem is that actually even when they go after them, they're going after all of us, because what happens is that gets transferred to the general health care system. You can't deny bringing them in. They're going to go through the emergency room. It's going to be even more costly. And so your insurance premiums on your health care are going to go up. That's the problem you have. It's kind of an interesting situation, because it really is transfer of wealth from the general public to a particular company's shareholders.
So let me ask you this, you know, because I've taken the position that, you know, like I said before, this is nothing new. I mean, companies have been getting away with this for years, especially when you look at pensions. And they did it, the companies have done an amazing job of stealing pensions from workers over the last 30 years. And I point to the steel industry where, you know, I know a bunch of people who are get their pension from the PBGC because a bankruptcy judge just wrote off the steel company's pension obligations. How much of this is just, you know, business as usual?
Well, a lot of it's business as usual, but I think they're taking it to the nth degree in the past, say, since 2000. The bailout of the savings and loans in the banks, the banks during 2007, 2008. I see a lot of what I call corporate socialism. There's a movement to, you think about the Supreme Court decision where they made, corporations a person.
Yep.
And it gives them a bunch of advantages, but you can't put them in jail for some reason, you know, and they're sort of a semi-person or a super-person. I find that a little bit, disturbing. Capitalism, at least the one I believe in, is about competition and having competition. And then you suffer the losses and gains for whatever you do.
Right.
So if I make an agreement with you, I follow through on that agreement. Morally, I should. Now, the problem is that people are finding more and more legal ways to get out of those agreements.
Yeah, I mean, in theory, I mean, the capitalism in theory to me works very well. But when you see it manipulated the way it's been for at least the last 30 years, you start to question.
Well, I would agree. And the problem is it's been manipulated for a long period of time, even before that. But there was sort of a benevolence of some companies and stuff like that. I remember when I first started working, we had a person who had brain cancer that was working for the company, and they kept him on at full salary and stuff like that. And actually, he used to come to work every day and do nothing.
I mean, give you a reason to wake up and exist.
Well, you think about it, the loyalty it bred in the employees of that company was tremendous.
Now, I would question then what size company is this? Because I've argued that, you know, as we've seen these companies grow larger and larger and the executives and the CEOs move further and further from what the workers who are actually doing the work, I think then you see that split of, you know, you've got the two Americas that John Edwards talked about. You've got the gated communities and then where the rest of us exist.
Yeah, that's the problem. See, the company I worked for back then was a very big company, but it was a very personal company. It was an engineering construction firm, and since then it's changed itself. So you've got more professional management who's not in touch with the people who work for them, and the people who work for them is really what produces for a company. You also have a situation, I think, where tax code and other things have increase the ability for capital, in other words, to have more capital over labor. And so labor is taxed at actually a higher rate than capital,
yeah,
which I don't think is right. I think if you're a capitalist, you believe everything should be taxed the same. Let the market work it out.
Yeah, well, I think income is income, and you should pay the same tax rate, whether you made it gambling on Wall Street or swinging a hammer.
I agree.
You listen to The Rick Smith Show with Professor Bruce Rader. He's an assistant professor of finance at Temple University. He's written the piece Designed to Fail about the case of Patriot Coal, talking about the situation that we've been talking about the last couple of days. We've got a link at TheRickSmithShow.com. Just click on the professor's name. It'll take you right there. You know, one of the arguments that I've been making is as we see this assault on pensions, on health care, it's playing out right before our eyes on the state level. And you see here in Pennsylvania, our governor, he's attempting to change the pensions for state workers here in the state, claiming there's some $42 billion unfunded liability and the sky's going to fall because tomorrow everybody's going to retire and we're going to have to pay all that. I've made a link between the two of these because I think what we're seeing is states trying to do what corporations have gotten away with over the years and really just do what they can to make the situation worse. So you throw up your hands and go, well, you know what? We've got to cut it. We could do nothing else.
Well, the problem is that what they've done is they've lowered taxes and not paid into those. So what they've done is basically presented us with a situation that would be, this would occur. In good times, they're supposed to put the money away. That's what a state is. And what we did, and we've been doing over the past 15, 20 years, is just cutting taxes, saying that we got to starve the beast. Well, no one wants their benefits cut, whether it's a company or an individual. Okay, they still want the roads, they still want the infrastructure, they still want a bunch of stuff. We've been sort of robbing all of those things for years, and that's why our infrastructure, for instance, is in such a bad situation.
Yeah.
We've been robbing what we should be doing to lower taxes because that makes people happy. And now we're in a situation, I think, where, you know, what we're doing is we're just going in the wrong direction.
Well, step back. The lowering taxes making people happy. I look around and I don't see that many people who are very happy, and taxes have, honestly, for most people, have never been lower.
Yeah, I know, but the problem is that when the taxes, we've had a big structural change. And so if you look at from that point of view, a lot of people are unhappy because of the uncertainty that structural change has caused and the way the government's approaching things, because it becomes very uncertain whether, you know, things are going to be around. They want to cut, for instance, I've worked all my life for Social Security. They want to cut Social Security. Okay. And it's, if you look at it from a funding point of view, it's funded supposedly to what, 2050?
Right.
That's a distance away. So why are they talking about cutting now?
Because there's this big crisis that they claim is down the road, and if I think it's 2037,
yeah.
that it only pays 75% after that. But you know, they got us to believe that it's going to go bankrupt and it's all over, and then the sky will fall.
Well, the problem is if you get rid of the middle class in the United States, they're probably right.
Well, I've argued that I think most of the middle class is already gone. And, you know, I've talked about jobs that I've had in my life. You know, back in the late 80s, I was working, throwing boxes on a shipping dock, making 15 bucks an hour with a health care and a pension contribution. Doing the same job today, some 24, 25 years later, they're making $11.90 an hour with no health care and no pension.
Well, that's because our government is sort of, shift a lot of that overseas.
I mean, you can't ship throwing boxes on a trucking dock overseas. I mean, I understand the manufacturing, but you know, even you know a lot of the manual labor jobs, some of the construction jobs that I remember as a kid, you know, you've seen the wages go down because you've seen this destruction of people's right to organize. You've seen the destruction of labor unions in this country, and you've seen that two Americas.
Well, what I'm talking about is when you get rid of the manufacturing jobs, that means there's more people to do the other jobs,
right.
And there's more competition, which drives down
yes.
the wages. That's why I say it's all part of the same idea and same concept.
Yeah, you're right. No, I'd love to see manufacturing come back. I think we've created this with bad policy. We can uncreate it.
I agree with you 100%. You know, we allow things to happen from other countries able to keep their currency at lower rates than they should be against the U.S. dollar, causing us to manufacture overseas and then import it here.
Yep.
So, you know, I understand perfectly what you're talking about. It's a difficult situation because no one stood up for anybody over the years. And it's time that people took back, you know, you hear people from the Tea Party talk about taking back the government. It's time the people of the United States took back the government from the corporations.
Absolutely. You know, and every time I get the chance to speak in front of people, that's what I say. Look, you know, we've got to undo all of the damage that's happened the last 30 years by doing what my grandparents' generation did. They stood shoulder to shoulder with their neighbor and their coworker, and they said, enough is enough already. We're going to organize in the workplace, but more importantly, we're going to push for full employment policies and policies that benefit a strong middle class, not a handful of billionaire class.
I agree. One of the things that made the United States great is the industriousness of its individual people, but along with its capitalist system. And I think we're losing both.
So it's your view, because I keep hearing people say, you know, we live in a free market economy and this is a capitalist nation. I'm not seeing that pure capitalist model. I'm just not seeing it, especially when you talk about bailing out the banks and all the things that we've done, all the handouts that we give to these big corporations. I'm just not seeing that capitalism.
Well, I agree with you 100%. The problem is that corporations allow you to isolate management from their decisions, which is kind of strange. You know, when we talk about brokerage houses and things like that, there's been a general structural change that no one seems to have noticed. We went, most of the brokerage houses, if you look to pre-1980, were partnerships.
Okay.
The first one changing was Salomon Brothers. So if they went under, like in 2007, 2008, the management lost everything they owned.
Oh.
Because they were partners. So they didn't take as many risks.
That's an interesting distinction. I've not heard that before.
And so if you look in a lot of the different industries, that's exactly it. Insurance companies. What were they 30 years ago? They were mutuals. They were responsible to the policyholders, not to shareholders. So if you have medical back then, they were responsible to you, so they were more likely to pay out because the money was yours.
Right.
when they shifted over, what happened? Now it's about the bottom line and the shareholders.
And
so denying a claim is become due course.
Yeah, and denying care, because what's happened is we've had our government who's taken on the sickest, the elderly and the young, basically taking them out of the insurance pool and really benefiting these insurance companies, which deny care. And I always use the fact that Krugman pointed out, 95% of all amputations due to diabetes paid for by Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've created this perverse incentive to deny care for diabetes.
Well, as I said, from a corporate model, it makes sense. But from a social model, it's problematic. And from a capitalist model, it's problematic.
Yeah.
As I said, I call this really a system of corporate socialism. And
it's exactly what it is.
And I don't, you know, when you hear people talk, certain people are socialistic, like the Obama when he did the bailout of the banks. Well, in a way, he was right. It was corporate socialism, though, not personal socialism.
Why was the, since you brought that up, why was the right so insane over him bailing out the auto industry after they wanted to bail out the banks? Is it, because I've taken the position, it's that the workers got to keep some of their pension and some of the things that they worked for.
Well, that what happened, if you look at the way they structured that, the United Auto Workers end up with a big piece of GM. And that's why I think people didn't like, because now the workers own the factory.
Which I'm okay with.
Well, I don't have a problem with that either, as long as they run it properly and run it like a capitalist. So I don't have a problem with it either. But the fact is that was what, if you look at sometimes you hear people on CNBC call it the investor class. The investor class doesn't like that because the bondholders lost and the stockholders lost.
But the workers didn't lose anything? Is that the...
Well, argument? I think the workers did lose something, but they didn't lose as much as the other class would have liked.
Right. That's a perfect way to end that. So let me get real quick back to this Patriot Coal situation. Where do you see this going from this point forward?
Well, it's in bankruptcy court. I'm not a lawyer, to be honest with you. And actually, it was kind of funny because I sent that to a friend of mine who's actually a bankruptcy professor at Penn. And he goes, well, maybe morally, I probably agree, but from a bankruptcy point of view, they're doing the right thing.
Jeez. Well,
And that's the difference between moral and legal and economic and legal.
Yeah, well, maybe we should probably start thinking back to being more moral.
Well, you know, people talk about family values and values this country was founded upon. When you get away from those values, what happens? You get perverse outcomes.
And to me, this is a perverse outcome.
This is a perverse outcome, yes, sir.
Professor Rader, I appreciate the time. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I'd love to talk to you again. Let's take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. For working people, come to talk. Two generations of workers in that, you know, it's just mind-blowing. You know, people give their lives, they sacrifice, they work, they break their bodies and what? Out on the end. Let's take a quick break, right back after this. Stick around. I don't remember what the guy.
Your proud defender of the working class majority, Rick Smith.
At PSECU, we'd love to help you get the ride you're drawn to. Buy the car you truly want with a loan you can afford. Car, minivan, SUV, scooter, or cycle. New or used, we have a solution for you. Get a rate as low as 1.49 annual percentage rate. Additional rates and terms are available. With PSECU, you can get the ride you truly want.
At PSECU, we'd love to help you get the ride you're drawn to. Buy the car you truly want with a loan you can afford. car, truck, minivan, SUV, scooter, or cycle, new or used, we have a solution for you. Get a rate as low as 1.49 annual percentage rate. Additional rates and terms are available. With PSECU, you can get the ride you truly want. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or go to PSECU.com/life today.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal opportunity lender.
AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Razor Tattoos presents Get On Board, an art show to benefit autism. Get On Board features custom, one-of-a-kind artwork on skateboard decks from nationally renowned tattoo artists and fine artists. All proceeds go directly to the Autism Society, Greater Harrisburg area. The initial public showing will be during the Derby Inc. Invitational Tattoo Convention at the Farm Show Complex, April 19th through 21st. Visit facebook.com/getonboardforautism. That's facebook.com/getonboardforautism. Sponsored by Razor Tattoos.
Wall Street is a beast, and proud of it. Note that the New York Stock Exchange long ago chose a pair of animals to depict both the market's rampaging power and its voracious nature. One is a snorting bull, representing surging stock prices, and the other is a bear, representing a down market, devouring stock value. But Charles, a creative citizen in Holly Hill, Florida, wrote to me suggesting that a third animal is needed to depict the true nature of the Wall Street beast. A hog. Not a little piggy, but a hog, a really big one. Yes, and we could name it Jamie. Jamie Dimon, I mean, the multimillionaire, silver-haired, golden-tongued CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase. For years, Dimon and Chase have wallowed in the warm glow of America's financial, political, and media limelight, hailed as paragons of Wall Street management and ethics. But suddenly last summer, a big oink erupted from Chase and Jamie's inner hoggishness surfaced. A $2 billion trading loss, which Dimon haughtily dismissed at first as a tempest in a teapot, turned out to be a staggering $6 billion loss. And now, a scathing Senate report reveals that this was not a mere trade blunder by Chase underlings, but the product of a systemic corporate culture of recklessness, greed, and deception. An internal email from Jamie himself with the words, "I approve," shows that the stench can be traced all the way to the top. Not only did Dimon know what was going on, he enabled it. What we have here is the same triple whammy that hit us in 2007. Ethical rot at the top of banks, sycophantish politicians, and willfully blind bank regulators. This is Jim Hightower saying, won't Wall Streeters ever learn? No, not until prosecutors gut it up and go after them. Our ethical waters will not clear up until we get the hogs out of the creek.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Power, we stand and fight together. There's power when we own the sky. Power, when we stand and fight together. There's power when we own the sky.
The goal really is to incentivize companies to come here in Pennsylvania, but not put it under pressure of the taxpayers. The companies have to make the investment. The companies have to hire somebody or they get nothing. Not one red cent gets laid out by the Commonwealth as it has in past programs. We think this is innovative and different than what other states are doing.
Love that. Innovative and different. Yes, it's giving free money away. That's innovative and different. You remember last year's debate over that, which, if you remember, the Benninghoff put forth and got passed a piece of legislation that said that employers get to keep the the state income tax that you think you're paying to the state, they get to keep it for themselves when they come here. And, you know, he said they're going to have to create jobs. When you dug under the surface, you found out that in his district, a company was coming anyway, and this was just a pot sweetener. Just a little bit extra, a little something for the, you know, like a housewarming gift, if you will. You gotta love that. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. So, and, you know, talking more about this Patriot Coal thing, which to me just, I guess as Bruce Rader pointed out, there's a difference between what's legal and what's moral or what's right. And to me, this whole situation, while it may be perfectly legal because these big companies have rigged the game and have set this stuff up, it is not. It's not right. Just because they can put all of that pension obligation, all that health care obligation into one company that they've designed to fail doesn't make it right. You know, and just because Mitt Romney and his ilk are very wealthy people and can buy PR doesn't make it right what they got away with. Which, you know, I look at this and it on so many levels. On so many levels, it's wrong. And I guess the other question that I have is, you know, if it's not for the United Mine Workers, if it's not for that union bringing out some 10,000 people into the streets in Charleston, if it's not for them highlighting this issue, if it's not for them taking to the streets and actually having the ability and the resource to fight this in court, do we ever hear about it? Or does this just become another one of those things that just happens? That's the other part of this. You know, how many people don't we know about? How often does this happen where we never hear about it? And I would argue fairly often. But anyway, while I was in Charleston on Monday, I had the opportunity to talk to a number of folks. And yesterday, if you listen to the program yesterday, talked to a number of people that, you know, talked about this situation. And if you missed that, thericksmithshow.com, that's where you get the podcast. It's there for you to take a listen to. I also had the ability to talk to these folks. Take a listen.
My name is Mitchell Howell. I'm a member of the United Mine Workers, have been for 41 years. I'm a retired coal miner, and this is my son. He's in support of the union, and that's what we're doing here today, is to help save our union and save our medical coverage and save our prescription drug coverage.
And what's going on? What brought you out here today?
Well, just because I'm a member of the United Mine Workers, and I think it's our duty to be here and support the union and in a civil, friendly way, not cause any trouble, but show our interest in our union.
Well, as I understand what's going on, the whole purpose of this is to highlight the fact that Patriot Coal was started pretty much to destroy your health care benefits and really the union as a whole, correct?
According to our president, Cecil Roberts, that is correct. Yeah.
Can you come up with any other rational thought for why they would have created Patriot Coal? From the studies that I've read, it looks pretty much like what corporate America has been getting away with for 30 years.
Well, it's sort of cut and dry to me that they were created as a spinoff company to get rid of just exactly what they're trying to do right now, file bankruptcy and try to dump all the retirees and cost us our insurance, our prescription drug coverage, and maybe possibly our pensions. And that's what we're here for. 5,000 of us supposed to be here today to protest what Patriot, Arch, and Peabody is doing.
You know, as I look at this, I ask the question, as a retiree, what's this going to mean to you? What's it going to mean to other retirees in the days coming forward? Because it's my understanding that once you retire, your pension secure, the health care that you negotiated as an employee should be secure as well. How can they take that from you?
Well, I don't know how they can, because it is supposed to be secure, but you see, what Patriot's trying to do, they filed bankruptcy and they're trying to dump us, and we should have federal law to protect us. That's what I think. Federal law should protect us. That's contract.
So, you know, in looking at if they get their way, if they go through the bankruptcy and they're able to wipe away all of these obligations, what's it going to mean to you personally and you and your family?
Well, that's going to mean that every prescription drug I take or my wife, we're going to have to pay for it out of our pocket or buy insurance another way, which is going to cost us a lot of money. Right now, we're getting our Medicare. We're getting Medicare, plus we're getting the 20 cent from the other, you know, MRI, mine is. And we get prescription drug coverage through our contract at a $5 prescription copayment. And if I lose this, I'm going to have to pay 100% of my prescriptions, and that's going to cost a lot of money that I don't have.
Yeah, and it's going to harm your family and your community. I look around, and I see an awful lot of retirees who this really is going to affect and harm as we move forward.
I think everybody here, supposed to be at least 5,000 here, they're subject to lose exactly the same thing I'm subject to lose. And we're here to stand up for our rights, and hopefully that Cecil Roberts, our good president, can find a way to save our prescription drug coverage and our 20% that Medicare don't pay for.
Well, I'm a supporter of Cecil. I think it's more people like you taking to the streets and more people like our listeners saying, you know, enough of corporate America being able to rob our future.
Well, you can look around and see all these people here. Like I said before, we're all here for the same reason. Save our union, save our prescription drug coverage, and save the retirees and widows and the dependents that 20% that Medicare don't pay for.
Well, let me ask you, in looking at this benefit, you know, some would say, well, it's a benefit that you were given. Can you address the concept of this was something that you were given?
Well, we worked as union members, and we negotiated through the union company, for us to have prescription drug coverage, and the International Union has got it for all of our union people, not just a few of us, but all of us, and all the guys that's laid off. Probably 10,000 or so in West Virginia alone, subject to lose everything we've been talking about.
So you could argue that this is deferred wages, a deferred compensation. You took lower benefits in your paycheck to make sure that in retirement you had some security.
Well, not necessarily. I retired 12 years ago. And when I voluntarily retired in 2000, I was drawing top union wages, working as a preparation plant operator in a coal tipple, and I drawed top pay. I never give up nothing, but it was negotiated through our contract that we should get everything that we're getting right now, but are subject to lose.
That's right. But in talking about the negotiation process, it was something that you gave up during your working years in wages that you would have gotten in wages that you gave up, saying we wanted health care in our older when we retire.
Well, sure. They would have rather gave us all a whole lot more money as give us health care, but the union can't stand for that. What's going to happen to us when we get older if we don't have health care?
Yeah. And I look at this, and, you know, coal miners have a much higher rate of black lung than anybody. And I'm curious, what percentage of your friends, you know, I'm not expecting you to know what percentage of coal miners in general, but of your friends have had lung problems or kidney problems or some of the diseases that are pervasive in this industry?
Well, you can look around and see a lot of older folks here, wheelchairs, canes, walkers. They're the ones that has the most to lose. Some of them don't get very much money a month, and it's just going to be a terrible thing if they lose what coverage that they have.
Yeah, I agree. And if I could ask your son a couple of quick questions, do you mind taking a moment for me?
Sure, that's fine.
What's your name?
My name is Barry.
Barry, you know, in looking at your father and looking at, you know, the years of dedication he gave to this company, how do you feel about the treatment that he's getting?
Well, I think it's unfair. Like most people, if they thought about it logically, would think it was unfair. They worked many years, most of them 30 to 40 years, at probably one of the most hardest, most dangerous jobs, professions in the country that there is. And the whole time they were working, they were promised once they did retire, hopefully get to retire early enough to enjoy some kind of life after working all those years, that they would be secure and at least have enough money to be able to pay their power bills and live on and have some kind of drug coverage and major medical, where they wouldn't have to worry about filing bankruptcy if they had to go stay in a hospital for a week or something. So, yeah, it's totally unfair. You know, union money put food on my table, you know, all the time I was growing up and being raised by my father, and I have the utmost respect for people who do this job in general, but especially ones who are the United Mine Workers represent here today.
You know, in looking at this, do you see this situation as a not just a problem for the mine workers and retired mine workers here, but for corporate America in general? Because what it appears to me as an outsider is this is just another in a long line of examples of corporations shedding their responsibilities that they negotiated with their employees who made the companies profitable.
Yeah, that's exactly what they're trying to do. They're trying to get rid of the cost, the legacy cost from Peabody and some other coal companies in the past, and they're just wanting to wipe the slate clean and start all over. and just basically just tell the people who's worked hard and made your company what it is today that we don't have any feelings for you anymore. And it's not fair. And another thing about union, too, especially in West Virginia, I don't know about across the country, but everybody else's wages, whether you work for another coal mine that's not union, whether you're working for a grocery store or anything like that, your benefits that you receive and your pay a lot of times is directly related to what the union has been able to negotiate for themselves. In other words, if union wages go down, everybody else's wages go down. That's just a fact. So that's also another reason I'm here.
So you don't believe in the concept of the benevolent corporation who gives us all of these wonderful things?
It's not given to these guys. You look around a lot of these guys. There's guys around here right now that I know personally that's still in their 50s and early 60s. It's already crippled from working in a coal mine. Can't breathe because of black lung. Other injuries and illnesses they have as a direct result of all their labor time that they put in for these companies and these coal companies like Patriot, whose representatives and corporate workers and stuff sitting on a big pile of money, you know, and they don't have to worry about their health care later on. They don't have to worry about if they're going to have enough money to pay their power bill or be able to put gas in their car or feed their kids. You know, they don't worry about those things. So, you know, until they walk a mile in their shoes, you know, they got to, things like this will help, at least it'll keep everybody else aware of what's going on.
And maybe make some people more aware that it may not know. Because, you know, you see these situations all over. A lot of corporations are shedding their retiree health care and shedding pensions. We're seeing a lot of states wanting to do the same thing. It just seems to be what our generation is doing.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But, you know, like I said, in West Virginia, and that's, I've only lived in two states in my whole life, and I was born and raised here. But anyway, what happens in coal mining, in particular, the UMWA, it affects everybody. It affects a girl waitressing at a restaurant. It affects a boy carrying groceries out of the store. It affects a guy pumping gas. So you know, it's not just the UMWA guys it's going to affect. It's going to affect everybody. If they can do it to a group of guys like this, that nobody in the world works harder than these guys do. I don't know if you've ever been underground in a coal mine, three miles deep in the mine, 36 inches tall, but it ain't no place for the meek. And, you know, you got to respect that.
I absolutely do, because the question is are we next? And I got the last question I've got for you. You know, what's going to happen to your father if they take these things away? What, in your view, what do you think is going to happen?
Well, it'll put a strain on, you know, of course, we're talking about the kind of money that most retirees, it's going to put a strain on them. You know, you're going to, you have to cut back even more. You have to, but for some people, not my mom and dad, I don't believe so. But there's a lot of people out there that retired earlier than Dad did that are living on probably less than what somebody would make on minimum wage right now. That's what they're drawing every month. And when they got to, I just don't think somebody 80 years old that worked for 40 years in the coal mines should have to worry, to have to lay awake at night staring at the ceiling wondering if they're going to be able to pay their power bill or make their medicine, or get their medicine this month. I just don't, this America, it shouldn't be that way.
I'm right there with you. I appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You are listening to The Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
Responding to the Atlanta schools cheating scandal, American Federation of Teachers President Randy Weingarten and Georgia Federation of Teachers President Verdalia Turner say the teachers' union doesn't condone cheating under any circumstances. Weingarten says it was the Georgia Federation of Teachers that first blew the whistle on the cheating on tests that has led to criminal indictments of 35 public school educators in Atlanta. Weingarten says standardized testing too often dominates everything else in public education today, and we need to move our schools from an overemphasis on these tests to truly rich and well-rounded curriculums deeply rooted in real education and learning. In Chicago Tuesday, hundreds of seniors, their families, and allies kicked off a Scrap the Cap campaign calling for an end to the Social Security income tax cap. The seniors did a song and dance routine using noisemakers filled with bottle caps, lifting the cap and applying the Social Security FICA tax to incomes above $113,700 would strengthen the Social Security system without cutting it. The Scrap the Cap shuffle was done at a rally attended by Congressman Danny Davis and Mike Quigley in Chicago's Federal Plaza on Tuesday. The seniors say any cuts to Social Security are unacceptable. In Janesville, Wisconsin on Thursday, U.S. Representative Mark Pocan is joining AFSCME, the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, Every Child Matters, the Children's Leadership Council, and the Alliance for Retired Americans to present a united front against the Ryan budget. Petitions protesting the privatization of Medicare and the slashing of budgets for social safety net programs will be delivered to U.S. Representative Paul Ryan's office. Representative Pocan represents part of Janesville and sits on the House Budget Committee with Ryan. Chinese workers enslaved during World War II by Japan continue to seek retribution. Jesse Russell reports.
Families of Chinese workers who were enslaved by Japan's Mitsubishi Corporation during World War II may finally have a day in court. The families are calling on the company to pay the equivalent of $16,130 per worker and erect a monument in Japan. More than 40,000 Chinese were abducted during the war and forced to work for Japan. Mitsubishi enslaved nearly 4,000 of those abducted. A number of groups have formed over the years trying to represent the workers or families of the workers. The newest group is seeking to bring cohesion between the various groups representing families with a clear and unified demand for compensation.
A Bloomberg News survey of economists is projecting that employers hired 199,000 workers in March, following a strong February when 236,000 new workers were hired. Official Labor Department numbers on jobs will be released on April 5th.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What keeps you up at night, Governor? What part of all of those worries concerns you the most? The cuts, the tax
hikes? Usually I wake up about 3 o'clock in the morning, and I wonder where we are going to balance the budget. We have a pension crisis just like every other state just about has a pension crisis.
You've had success. I want our viewers to know you've balanced two previous budgets, if not more. Right. Correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, you've closed deficit holes of more than $4 billion. You've had success.
Sure. Check out the website, therickssmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. You know, so we see all of this stuff going on about charter schools and all of the money that's been stolen from public education. What does that mean? What's it mean to the schools? What does it mean to the students? And what does it mean to the taxpayers, the people who are going to be ultimately paying the bill for this, especially on the local level, as the states walked away from their responsibility to the local schools? What's it mean to the local taxpayer? And here to help me work through some of those questions, I've got Brendan Murray. He's a school board member in the Harrisburg School District. Brendan, thanks for taking time for me.
Well, thanks for having me on, Rick. I mean, this is a huge situation with our school district. We have a chief recovery officer at this point in time due to the state law that has put him in place here, and he asked us to look at every possible way to raise funds and revenue for the district because of the lack of funding that we are receiving from the state. And we've now had to look at a possible 9.7% increase in property tax. Now, we already had a budget deficit of $4.2 million before we had our last budget and finance meeting. And now we are finding out that even if we were to put these exemptions through, because of other things that have happened to the district, such as sequestration and other things that have come to light, we're actually at $5.1 million in a deficit. So even if we were to put through this astronomical 9.7% increase in property tax, we aren't even close to filling that budget gap that was led to us by sequestration from the federal government and the lack of funding from our governor.
So what you're basically saying is the feds have walked away from local education, the state has walked away from local education, and even what they're telling you that you need to do, which is raise taxes on the local level by almost 10%, that's still not going to be enough.
Absolutely. And I mean, it's disheartening. We had Congressman Scott Perry come to Ben Franklin School, and I am the liaison for the school district to that school as a board member. We walked around, and I continue to harp on the fact of, you know, the fact that we are not getting the funding that we need. Therefore, children, you know, are having to be paid for lunches by our general fund as opposed to the way that it should be done. I mean, 90% of our students, roughly 90% of our students, are free or reduced lunch, which puts a heavy burden on our district to come up with the funds to make sure that they get their three square meals a day. In fact, a lot of our students, the only meals that they receive is from the school district.
Yeah. Yeah, so, no, I lived that as a kid, Brendan. I know exactly what you're talking about. But what I hear from a lot of my right-wing friends is, well, if you can't afford, the solution is to do away with those programs, because if we don't have the money for it, we got to tighten our belt. And if, you know, those kids don't eat, well, you know, just make them a little tougher.
And it's so disheartening to hear that, considering the fact that they are the party of family values, and, you know, they want to continue on that path of showing, you know, I guess conservatives were, you know, the compassionate conservatives. I guess that apparently has gone out the window at this point in time.
Well, they do believe in family values. They believe in their family values, and the hell with yours.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just the impact of the sequestration on our school district. Roughly in Title I funding that we receive quite a bit from the federal government, we're going to lose over $450,000 over the next year because of unfortunate adults making bad decisions in Congress.
But hold on, hold on a second, Brandon, because, you know, I heard it today on right-wing radio across on my way to work, that the sequestration, the cuts to that didn't do anything. There are no cuts. Did you notice it? They went on extensively about how the cuts didn't exist and they're not harming anyone. So you're telling me otherwise.
Oh, absolutely. You see, the problem is that they're not hearing it from the districts, because they're probably representing districts that it didn't hurt that much. But the districts that are hurt the most are the urban population. And, you know, I live in a district where we're in a situation where we're always in dire need of funding for almost every single possible program. And then they have the problem of what they call, what we talked about the last time I was on, which is unfunded mandate. So if we were to receive federal funding for a program and then they decide that they do not want to fund that program any longer, it goes away, and we still have to fund it if we're receiving any kind of federal funding for any other project. So that means that it now falls back right on the taxpayers of Harrisburg, right on the residents of Harrisburg, and we now have to fund something that we were supposed to receive the funding from the federal government. So, I mean, this is a situation where, you know, as a person who's lived here for quite a few years, we all know that Harrisburg has a problem when it comes down to funding education due to the fact of, you know, only half of the population able to be taxed for property tax, and because of the state being here and because of, you know, federal buildings being here. But, I mean, it's unfair to ask, after raising taxes 2.5 mils last year, which was roughly about $30 per household of a $50,000 household. So if you owned a house that was worth $50,000, you pay $30 more this year. Now, after doing the math on this, it's going to raise the income, it's going to raise the taxes on the property roughly about $120.
Wow.
So, I mean, just imagine how many of these families who are barely getting by and want to live in Harrisburg, you know, it's going to lead to the fact that no one is going to be able to live in our state capital.
So let me ask you this.
No one will be able to afford it.
Let me ask you this, Brandon. You know, as a school board member, you know, you've got to see the winds of change coming. You've got to see the direction that things are going. I look at this, and what you've laid out to me is the perfect recipe for disaster. This idea that we're going to starve public education, we're going to starve it of resources so that it fails, so that we can then bring in the charters, we can then bring in the for-profits and the non-for-profit charters who are going to then come and profitize the education, and everything will be wonderful when the corporations take over.
And you know, another thing that I did want to touch on is that everyone believes that, you know, this is not their problem. Well, eventually this is going to lead to everyone worry, because, you know, just because it doesn't affect property owners in Susquehanna Township and in Perry County and, you know, West Shore, this eventually will come back to haunt those residents, because if they don't stand up and fight for public education, we're going to have a lot of students, a lot of young black males, and a lot of young males from our school district that are not going to have the education that they deserve, and they're going to have to look at other means of trying to feed their family.
Yeah, see, Britta,
it just leads down the wrong path.
I'm with you, and to me, it's an absolute poverty issue. You're going to have poor kids who aren't going to be able to get the education. And what happens? Then you have that cycle of poverty that never gets broken. To me, education is that opportunity to break that cycle of poverty. And what it looks to me like the state and at the federal level, they want to institutionalize that cycle of poverty by not funding it properly and not creating a situation where that opportunity is there.
Absolutely. I totally agree.
So what do we do? I mean, they're talking about almost a 10% increase on property tax that folks here that obviously can't afford it already. What should we be doing? What's the ask?
Well, the good news is that this is going to have to come before the voters. There's going to be a referendum on the next primary ballot initiative, and it will have to be put before the voters of whether or not they want to accept this tax increase. Because anything above a 2.5 millage rate has to come before the voters. Now, we can approve the agreement and go forward with it, but even if we do approve it as board members, which it's very hard for me to see myself actually ever voting for this, but to have the voters say yes to it too. And I can tell you the sentiment around the city and the district is they do not want to raise any taxes whatsoever. They can't afford it. So they need people to go out and vote, and they need to vote their conscience and vote, what is in the best interest of the city and what is the best interest of themselves. So it is going to be very important to get people out to vote in a primary election coming up in May.
And even beyond that, I mean, to get people to vote in the midterm elections so that here, we start getting people into positions on school boards that are going to say, you know what, we're not going to continue to pass this along to the folks at the bottom of the hill. Maybe we need to start looking back to where school funding used to come from the state and federal level. Because, I looked at the numbers, and I've had a couple of school board members show me, look, we used to fund education at the state level at more than 50%. Now it's down into the, 20-25%?
Yes, we continue to go down, and the federal government doesn't help out either. I mean, they've been cutting back on funding. This cut gotten punished. It pretty much goes back to the ways that we've known what they wanted to do from the beginning, and that is privatize this industry, and go back to when little Johnny won't be able to get an education because he won't be able to afford to go to a private school. Or, it's getting to the point now where what is our priority? I wrote an article in the Patriot News a while back about, the governor needs a morality check.
Yep.
And, this is something that, he used to be a teacher. He used to be in a classroom. And you can't tell me that he feels that packing more students into a classroom is going to help them get educated. Because it's not. No study in the world shows that.
I'm right there with you. And, to me, it's going to take calling your representatives, calling the governor's office, writing letters, talking to your friends, talking to your neighbors, and talking to your school boards, and making sure that we still have school boards and we don't continue this march towards privatization because to me, what it looks like, Brandon, to me, on the big picture is we'll never hear about any of this stuff. It'll all be done in smoky back rooms, at boardrooms where you and I won't have access.
Yeah,
sad,
you're right.
Sad
and
stuff.
I mean, it's a shame that the future of the Commonwealth is left up to people who only are worried about privatization and not about the actual future.
Sad, sad stuff. Brendan Murray, I appreciate the time. It's always great talking with you. I appreciate your insight.
Well, thanks for having me on, Rick, and you have a good day.
Thanks so much. Brendan Murray, Harrisburg School Board member. Just mind-blowing stuff, I'll tell you. Quick break, right back. Stick around.
It is all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith.
At PSECU, we'd love to help you get the ride you're drawn to. Buy the car you truly want with a loan you can afford. Car, truck, minivan, SUV, scooter, or cycle. New or used, we have a solution for you. Get a rate as low as 1.49 annual percentage rate. Additional rates and terms are available. With PSECU, you can get the ride you truly want.
At PSECU, we'd love to help you get the ride you're drawn to. Buy the car you truly want with a loan you can afford. Car, truck, minivan, SUV, scooter, or cycle, new or used, we have a solution for you. Get a rate as low as 1.49 annual percentage rate. Additional rates and terms are available. With PSECU, you can get the ride you truly want. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or go to psecu.com/life today.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal Opportunity Lender.
AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Razor Tattoos presents Get On Board, An Art Should Have Benefit Autism. Get On Board features custom, one-of-a-kind artwork on skateboard decks from nationally renowned tattoo artists and fine artists. All proceeds go directly to the Autism Society, Greater Harrisburg area. The initial public showing will be during the Derby Inc. Invitational Tattoo Convention at the Farm Show Complex, April 19th through 21st. Visit facebook.com/getonboardforautism. That's facebook.com/getonboardforautism. Sponsored by Razor Tattoos.
And I think it's going to be awakening to us, because just like the schools, when we cut the funding for schools, now we put it back in the budget, so they really didn't get cut. But I think now schools are starting to step up to the plate and look how they can maybe partner with private people to bring education like better into the schools.
Inequality I just ignore. Don't know what a golden rule is for, but I do know a thing or two. And if all the states red, no blue, what a wonderful world this
is. Yeah, that's something you're going to be hearing a lot of over the next several weeks. That was Republican Sue Helm saying, well, we took it out, but we put it all back. You know, there was no real cut. There was no cut to education. Oh, everything's fine. Don't worry about it. But the reality is there have been massive cuts to education. But we're going to be hearing a lot of that. And the other part of what she said is, well, we need to figure out how to get business into the schools. How to get business, really, is what she's saying, business to take over the schools, which is what we're seeing going on across the country. And I just read this article over at USA Today where they're pointing out, oh, you know, school districts are asking these companies to come over and take over their schools. I guess the question is that a good thing or is that a bad thing? Here to help us work through some of that, I've got our good friend, attorney Irwin Aronson. Irwin, thanks for taking time for me.
Good to be here, Rick. How are you?
I am good. You know, I read this article over at USA Today where they were talking about this, these KIPP schools, which, you know, they said, oh, you know, they're nonprofit, of course. And they operate all the 125 for some odd schools, and, you know, they've got tough, rigorous curriculum, but they're no different than the public schools, and they educate, and they're wonderful and fantastic. And it was, to me, it seemed more like a sales piece than any part of news, but they're selling.
Well, there's no question about it, and it's exactly what they're doing. They have, once we get to this point where we corporatize the people's children's access to a real, meaningful, high-quality education. The next step, of course, is going to be marketing, because now we're shopping for students. And they're not shopping for just any students. They're shopping for students that meet a certain profile. I mean, if the police were doing this kind of profiling, there would be a civil rights suit. But this is all about chasing the almighty buck. We need to remember, and for our listeners, they need to maybe learn for the first time, that this KIPP organization that sells itself as a community-based, do-good, non-profit entity is the outgrowth of this program called Teach for America, where they insert non-certified teachers, youngsters who are finishing up an education, college education, into rural and underserved, understaffed schools for a one-year program. And the people who started KIPP intellectually were those who were kind of the graduates of that program, but they're funded very substantially by the Walton Foundation, you know, the people who brought you Walmart, and the DeVos Foundation's Betsy DeVos and the Amway fortune, and all of these folks who have been attempting to manipulate and corporatize and undemocratize and essentially destroy our access to a quality education for all. And they are attempting to suggest that they have a better way to spend our tax dollars, and the only thing we really need to do is to free them up and stop regulating them and get rid of all of the mandates and get rid of the accountability for their expenditure of our tax dollars and the transparency of how they expend our tax dollars, and let them be what they are, and they, of course, will educate everybody that they choose to educate, and everybody else will be left in the dust.
And who will end up educating them, and what will happen to those kids? I mean, you know, I look at this, and, you know, they have a really a great sales pitch. You know, our teachers are the best, and our curriculum's the best. And you go, but hold on, you know, when I compare apples to apples, what you're telling me is not borne out in fact.
Oh, much to the contrary. We know, for example, in Philadelphia, where KIPP is running a couple of schools, that the students in those schools do not perform any better and often perform worse than kids who are in school district operated schools. But the real rub, of course, is that while they get seed money from these corporateer foundations that I've described in our conversation today, the bulk of their money comes from the taxpayers, because it's publicly funded privatized education. So at a minimum, if indeed the people who run KIPP and others of its ilk believe that they have come up with a formula and a method to deliver education platforms better than what a local school district can, since we taxpayers have paid for what they have developed in substantial measure, they ought to be required to share it with us so that they're not hiding this and shielding us from it and denying us access to it, but doing what charter schools were supposed to be in the very first instance, and that was a laboratory to find better methods, and because we taxpayers were paying for it, to share those with everybody so that we can adopt best practices, if indeed they've uncovered them, and utilize them so that not only the well-scrubbed 100 kids that happen to be in one of their schools get access to it, but the hundreds of thousands of kids who need the educational quality that they claim to have produced have access to it.
Yeah, I read this article, and it all sounds great, though. I mean, you know, and you're right. It was supposed to be about best practices, and we share those. And what it seems they're doing is, well, they're taking them for their own.
Well, it's even worse than that. It's not just that they're taking them for their own. They are, at the same time that they assume that these are proprietary,
that's
in effect,
the word.
That they belong, that these things that have been developed at our expense belong to them, but then they are denying people access to it. How outrageous is that, given that it was funded with tax dollars? And if anybody else wants access to it, they want to charge them for it. Until I learned about these people, I really and truly thought that prostitution was the only business in which you could sell something and still have it after you sold it.
Wow. And you know, the sad thing is I fully get that analogy.
I wish I didn't get that analogy, but I candidly, having thought about it for a while, I cannot come up with one that is more direct and more on point.
And the sad thing to me is what we're doing is we're opening up what appears to me we're opening up education to the wild, wild west, where you're going to have some of these people coming in. And I look at the Frontier Virtual Cyber Charter School there in Philadelphia, in business a couple of years, and then boom, gone. What happened to all that money? What happened to all those kids' futures? What happened to all of that? Just gone.
Well, the money is sad, but what was done to the children and their families is unforgivable. We are losing a generation. And sadly, if one is a minimalist student of American history, what we come to learn is that all this is very old wine in a new bottle. Public education, open access, democratized, free public education for all is a relatively young idea in this country.
You're absolutely right. It is a relatively new thing in history. And at the point that we're going, it looks like it's going to be something that, well, only lived a very short period of time. Appreciate the time, Irwin. Thanks. Always great talking with you. You know, I look at this, and at the end of it, this to me is, it's all about, you know, how much money they're going to be able to screw out of this whole system. I don't know if you saw this story in Georgia. It's been ongoing for quite some time because, you know, some of the urban schools in the Atlanta public school system were doing wildly well. And early on, there was some allegation, you know, maybe they're cheating. You know, the thought had come up, maybe they're cheating. And those people who said, you know, got a question, the scores have turned around rapidly. Those people were called racist. Right. Those are, you know, can't they do well? And I remember going, kind of stepping back on, I want to see it. Because when you have that kind of turnaround, and I know we all love to see the movies, and we love to see the, you know, the strong person come in, you know, like the baseball bat guy, I forget, I think it was called Lean on Me, Stand by Me, or whatever it was, where, you know, it was a story of Joe Clark, you know, the guy with the baseball bat, and, you know, he turned the whole school around because, you know, he was going to do things different, and he was going to buck the system. And, you know, I like to believe in movies. The reality is movies not so much like life. Now you see the story that came out today that, well, 35 people were indicted on racketeering and conspiracy charges. Can you say RICO? Yeah, that's something I really like, you know, being put with our schools, the RICO Act and our public schools. And it all comes down to this superintendent, this woman, Beverly Hall, who has been cheered as the great savior of education there. She's been given numerous awards of, you know, of her innovation and all of the wonderful things that she has done. Well, it turns out what she has done is she created a culture of cheating. And the article and the indictment really goes into how she was able to, you know, basically strong arm people into, you know, cheating. The single, and as the indictment says, the superintendent was a person who had a single-minded purpose, and that single-minded purpose was to cheat, was to make the test scores go up, to make this at any cost. And if anyone, according to the article, if anyone brought to light that someone was cheating, they were terminated. And the people who were found guilty of cheating, well, they got a little suspension tap on the wrist. Hey, don't get caught. Don't get caught next time. And you look at this and you go, you know, this is what this high-stakes testing does. This is what these situations do. So now you've got 35 people. And originally the investigation, there were some 180 teachers who were originally implicated in this. And there still may be more indictments coming. I'm not saying there aren't, but right now 35 of them, and it's across, you know, the entire spectrum. 35 people. You had the superintendent, along with 14 teachers, six principals, two assistant principals, six testing coordinators, a school improvement specialist, And even the secretary they had involved. And they said, you know, it all comes down to erasing. What they were basically doing, as I, if I'm reading this right, is, you know, these kids would take the tests and they'd get somebody in there with a pencil. With an eraser, and they'd be fixing it. Now remember, this is the woman who was named National Superintendent of the Year by the School Superintendents Association. Said her leadership had turned around the Atlanta school system, made it a model of urban school reform. Did I mention the fact that, you know, she had an incentive, a money incentive? Yeah. So when you go and you think about this, and you know, understand, you know, I'm not against evaluating teachers. I'm not against them being held to high standards. But when you start saying, okay, we're going to directly tie your compensation to these tests, what do you think is going to happen? And then you have, because we're turning education into corporate America, understand that. So as we're turning this into corporate America, look at what we've seen across corporate. Look at the cheating. Look at the shenanigans that have been going on. Look at, you know, look at this thing in West Virginia. Look at this Patriot Coal. Look at how they've gained. What do you think is going to happen to education? And what does this say to our kids? Well, you know, the test obviously didn't matter. The teachers were cheating. And I hope they all go to prison. I hope they take all of them with them as well. But none more than this Beverly Hall. Because this comes from the top down. This is a culture that she brought with her. And, you know, you could say the same thing about that Michelle Rhee, who left D.C. under the cloud of you know, some serious allegations there. Now she's a national. Maybe this Beverly Hall have a very happy career as a shill for the privatization movement. If convicted of all counts, Ms. Hall could face 45 years in prison, and I don't even think that's enough. Because at the end of this, what happens to all those kids who, you know, they thought they were doing great? What happens to their future? Man, I just think we're so on the wrong path. So far down the wrong path. Not even funny to me. And it's something we've got to really be fighting back, which is why this next couple of days we're going to be in Washington, D.C. For the big conference going on down there, the big Occupy the DOE 2.0. Going to be talking to people from across the country. And, you know, it's really, you know, when we go to these things, it's, you know, it's always up in the air and there's always a lot of uncertainty. But you know what? I think it's important that we get to these things. I think it's important we bring back that information because, look, this push towards privatization is just not happening in our backyard. It's happening all across the country, and it's something we had better quickly and surely put down. Gonna take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Riders on the storm. Into this house we're born. Into this world we're thrown. Like a dog without a bone, an actor out of bone. Riders on the storm.
Where family values are more than slogans. The Rick Smith Show.
Wall Street is a beast, and proud of it. Note that the New York Stock Exchange long ago chose a pair of animals to depict both the market's rampaging power and its voracious nature. One is a snorting bull, representing surging stock prices, and the other is a bear, representing a down market, devouring stock value. But Charles, a creative citizen in Holly Hill, Florida, wrote to me suggesting that a third animal is needed to depict the true nature of the Wall Street beast, a hog. Not a little piggy, but a hog, a really big one. Yes, and we could name it Jamie. Jamie Dimon, I mean, the multimillionaire, silver-haired, golden-tongued CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase. For years, Dimon and Chase have wallowed in the warm glow of America's financial, political, and media limelight, hailed as paragons of Wall Street management and ethics. But suddenly last summer, a big oink erupted from Chase, and Jamie's inner hoggishness surfaced. a $2 billion trading loss, which Diamond haughtily dismissed at first as a tempest in a teapot, turned out to be a staggering $6 billion loss. And now, a scathing Senate report reveals that this was not a mere trade blunder by Chase underlings, but the product of a systemic corporate culture of recklessness, greed, and deception. An internal email from Jamie himself with the words, "I approve," shows that the stench can be traced all the way to the top. Not only did Diamond know what was going on, he enabled it. What we have here is the same triple whammy that hit us in 2007. Ethical rot at the top of banks, sycophantish politicians, and willfully blind bank regulators. This is Jim Hightower saying, won't Wall Streeters ever learn? No, not until prosecutors gut it up and go after them. Our ethical waters will not clear up until we get the hogs out of the creek.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Earth, sky. When you look at a crescent moon shortly after sunset or before sunrise, you can sometimes see not only the bright, shining crescent, but also the rest of the moon as a dark disk.
That pale glow on the dark part of the crescent moon is called Earthshine. It's really light reflected from Earth. To understand Earthshine, remember that the moon is a globe, just like Earth.
And just like Earth, the globe of the moon is always half illuminated by sunlight. When we see a crescent moon in the west after sunset or in the east before dawn, we're seeing just a sliver of the moon's lighted half.
Now think about nights when you're looking up at a full moon. The bright moonlight can illuminate the landscape around you on nights when the moon is full.
Likewise, whenever you see a crescent moon, a nearly full Earth appears in the moon's night sky. The full Earth illuminates the lunar landscape, just as a full moon illuminates an earthly landscape on nights when the moon is full. And that is Earthshine. It's light from the nearly full Earth shining on the moon.
So next time you see a crescent moon, expand your thinking. See the glow on the unlit portion of the moon for what it really is, sunlight reflected from the nearly full Earth shining in the moon's sky.
Find out what's happening in tonight's sky. Come to earthsky.org and click on Tonight. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
At PSECU, we'd love to help you get the ride you're drawn to. Buy the car you truly want with a loan you can afford. Car, truck, minivan, SUV, scooter, or cycle. New or used, we have a solution for you. Get a rate as low as 1.49 annual percentage rate. Additional rates and terms are available. With PSECU, you can get the ride you truly want.
At PSECU, we'd love to help you get the ride you're drawn to. Buy the car you truly want with a loan you can afford. Car, truck, minivan, SUV, scooter, or cycle, new or used, we have a solution for you. Get a rate as low as 1.49 annual percentage rate. Additional rates and terms are available. With PSECU, you can get the ride you truly want. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or go to PSECU.com/life today.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal opportunity lender.
Going to take to the streets the next 2 days, Thursday and Friday, in D.C. There is a movement of folks coming to the Capitol to say, you know what, we need to be fixing public education, get away from this privatization, the profitization, maybe get away from all of this standardized testing and do what we know works, do what, you know, maybe go a little old school, you know, small class sizes, you know, hands-on stuff, maybe some extra tutoring if it's needed, you know, stuff like that. You know, no silver bullets, actually the things that we know well, work. I know it's hard. I know it's hard work, but I think it's the right work. So we're going to be in D.C. for the next 2 days, occupy the DOE, going to be broadcasting from there both days. So we hope that we'll get some thoughts and inputs from you. But before we go, I wanted to I wanted to talk to someone who's going to be there, so I've asked Morna McDermott. She is a 25-year educator and also with the United Opt-Out Movement to come talk to us about the next couple of days, what she expects, what she hopes, and what we should be doing. Morna, thanks for taking time for me.
Thank you so much for having me.
You know, I look at this as an excellent opportunity. Anytime I see people taking to the streets, I say this is an opportunity to educate, activate, and inform people. Tell me what you expect the next couple of days.
Well, what we hope, first of all, is for an excellent turnout. And we hope to provide more attention to the issues that are at hand. I think we're not so much there to speak to Arne Duncan or the people inside the building, so much as we are to make our presence known to parents, educators, and community members all over the country and make them aware of what's really going on behind the scenes of corporate education or corporate reform model of education.
Yeah, I hate to use that word reform because, you know, a lot of people try to put positive spin on reform, yet most of the reform that I see, especially coming from the corporate side of things, not real good for me and my family and not very good for working people in this country.
Yeah, they've ruined the word for many of us.
You know, and for me, I say, you know, maybe we should be reforming things back to what we know actually works, small community schools and neighborhood schools where it's part of the community, not these big education parks, and certainly not ones that are run by boards of directors and for the interests of big corporations.
Exactly, exactly. I like to say in shorthand, if you want to know what works in education, go look at the schools where parents are able to spend $50,000 a year or more at these private schools, and go look at what they do. Because clearly there's something about that model that works, because people wouldn't be shelling out huge amounts of money if it didn't.
Yep.
And you will find small class size, you will find qualified teachers, you will find creative hands-on learning that involves students in constructivist approaches. You will not find students sitting down and taking bubble dot tests.
But we need to measure, Marna. We need to know if our kids are learning, don't we?
Measurement and assessment are not the same thing, and that's a big leap that everybody makes. Well, we need the numbers. And I say, hold on right there. First of all, if you ask yourself if the origin of these numbers is even reliable or valid. We don't even know what we're measuring half the time, but yet we're so obsessed with numbers, we don't even ask ourselves what the origin of that data might be. There are a million ways to evaluate, to assess good teachers from not good teachers, and students who are learning from students who are not learning. And you don't need these high-stakes tests to do so, and in fact, they misinform us more than they inform us about anything.
Yeah, and you know, I actually asked for my daughter to get a little extra tutoring in math because, you know, she it's like anything, you know, doesn't want to sit down with mom and dad. Asked if she could go to tutoring after school, and they said no, she wasn't far enough behind. I mean, stop and think about this for a second.
She doesn't qualify for food stamps, apparently, right?
No, I mean, no, that's part of it. But, you know, I look at this and I go, well, she's not far enough behind because, and I understand, look, you want to get the kids who are farther behind, you want to get them caught up. But what about the kids who are, they're doing okay, but they're starting to struggle. What about helping them as well and spreading
right.
that resource out? And it comes back to this idea that we've really just underfunded our education system to the point to where, you know, even if kids need a little extra help, it's never going to be available.
Right, right. And I gave up believing a long time ago that what reformers, in quotes, needed, what these policymakers, all they needed was the truth. They needed the right information. If they just knew what the truth was, they'd wake up and change their minds. And the sad reality is, no, they know full well what works and what doesn't genuinely for quality learning for all children, and they're choosing to ignore it. They're choosing to ignore it because what they're doing in corporate reform models of education that involve collecting big data have very little to do with what we know is effective, meaningful learning and instruction. The two are not synonymous.
So let me ask you this, Morna, because, you know, I have a lot of my friends say, well, you know, Bill Gates is behind, you know, charter schools and all of this stuff, and Bill Gates is a rich guy, so he obviously knows something that you don't. Because he's a rich guy, so he knows how to do this stuff. We should let him do this. What's the response to that?
Yeah, I guess the wealthy landowners down in the South before the Civil War knew a lot about economics, too.
Touche. But, you know, at the end of it, you have this mentality that, you know, these big corporations, they're successful in whatever business that they're doing for themselves. There's a view of what they're doing is successful. So the corporate model should work in education?
Well, the corporate model works for making money, absolutely. I mean, just look at the salaries and look at the funding and look at the billions of dollars that Pearson is bringing in and the people who are, you know, offering, you know, professional teacher trainings to learn how to implement the Common Core, look at, you know, the for-profit charter schools. They're making a ton of money. They're brilliant at that. But they don't understand, nor do they care to understand, what matters for children.
And I hear that, and that's disheartening to me on so many levels, because, you know, I've said numerous times that, you know, this is the hill that the working class of the country has to die on. This idea of an education for everyone, an opportunity to get a good quality education.
It up, it's because all these reality shows, and they first got started with Jerry Springer, are basically exhibitions of people behaving badly.
They absolutely are. What? Well, here, let me go ahead and just do this.
I mean, and that's what they all are. I mean, whether it's Mob Wives or whatever, I've mentioned that one before, or Buck Wild or whatever. I mean, you know, what can I say? It's people behaving badly, acting in poor taste, and that's putting it mildly, but just acting like complete asses.
Well, I went over, and I'm sure it's been scrubbed by now, maybe not. I went over and checked out some of this young man's some of the tweets this young man had put out. Getting married at 22 sounds a lot like leaving a party at 9:30. Newton's third law of emotion: for every male action, there is a female overreaction. Let me find a couple more here.
Wouldn't know about that, Bob.
This is, of course, Shane Gandy, who was found dead of asphyxiation in his vehicle on Monday, having decided at apparently 3 o'clock on Sunday morning to go four-wheeling and leaving from a bar. You know, that's never a good sign. You ain't ever lived if you haven't gone muddin'.
Now, what exactly is mudding? I don't know.
Mudding is to take one's four-wheel drive vehicle and go driving around in slop. Mud. And the report that I read said that he, his uncle, and a friend were found dead in the truck. He was the vehicle. He was behind the wheel. The tailpipe was full of mud, which means, of course, that, you know, carbon monoxide exhaust, you know, got them.
And they were too drunk to exit the vehicle?
That I don't know. But they declared that they were going mudding at about 3 o'clock in the morning and made the declaration in a bar.
Well, I heard something to the effect that they were having a mudding contest to raise funeral for this to raise money for this boy's funeral.
Then this tweet: nothing ruins your Friday like realizing it's only Wednesday.
I'm sorry?
Nothing ruins your Friday like realizing it's only Wednesday. Let's see, then there's another tweet: I'm an ass kind of guy. Then it's a great day to be alive. It's Friday, who's ready to party? And, you know, basically on and on.
Well, you can go on with those. I mean, those things are just his tweets, and a tweet is a tweet is a tweet, but, you know.
But I got, you know how I am with neologisms and so forth. It occurred to me that we are no longer, that when you take the totality of the Appalachian experience into account, whether it be this young man from the MTV exploitation series or the 4,000 excess deaths that happen in mountaintop removal communities every year, we're no longer hillbillies, Jim. We're expendabilities.
Well, I agree with you. I totally agree. Wholeheartedly. And when people see stuff like that and they look at this kind of stuff, I mean, one girl on this program was arrested for drugs. Another one was popped for DUI. This guy wants to go mudding.
Well, apparently, and this young man had had his first DUI before he turned 21.
Well, that's not exactly good either. But I'm very sorry it happened.
But I am too, and I want to make that clear. And I also want to make clear, Jim, since we are talking about this story, that in many ways you can take MTV's Buck Wild and understand it not as simply as they tried to portray it, a bunch of kids who ain't got much, who are having fun with what they got. That's the way they describe themselves. But it is better understood as a picture of the hopelessness and the ennui, if you will, that attends being a young person in Appalachia and has largely attended that status for in excess of 100 years.
Well, Bob, I don't see that changing anytime soon.
Well, why would it change unless someone wants it to change? Unless we as a country stand up and say, you know, it's got to get better. And there are a lot of places, and among others, Chris Hedges did a very good job of pointing out some of these places. There are a lot of places where we need a national will to make things better. I mean, since we've wandered off into the woods of West Virginia now, Jim, I guess you saw or heard the story out of Mingo County today.
No.
Well, you know where Mingo County is, right?
Not really. No.
Well, it's down in southern West Virginia on the Tug Fork River across the river. From Kentucky, it is the home of the Hatfields and McCoy, the West Virginia side of the Hatfields and McCoy feud.
Okay.
It was known in the early parts of the 20th century as Bloody Mingo. It's the county that is the home of the little town of Matewan, wherein took place a rather significant skirmish in the civil rights struggles of working people in the early part of the 20th century. And today, the sheriff of Mingo County, a man by the name of Eugene Crum, did as was his wont to do at lunchtime every day, and that is to go and grab him a sandwich from the little local restaurant there in Williamson. And he'd sit in his vehicle and kind of do some, you know, low-rent surveillance on one of the local pill mill houses. And today, while he was eating his lunch, a man came up, stuck a gun to his head, and pulled the trigger. It yet remains to be seen if this will get as much coverage as the shootings of the shooting in Texas of the district attorney and his wife. And it's certainly not a competition. Tennis Melvin Maynard, 37 years old, of Del Barton, was gunned down as following the shooting. He is in not the best of condition in a hospital in Logan, West Virginia, Jim. But we must understand and we must remember that America does not have a gun problem. We've been told that repeatedly by the National Rifle Association, right? We don't have a gun problem.
Well, I think in Ohio, that the sales on guns today or yesterday or whenever it was before the governor signed the bill or something were just astronomical. So, I mean, I guess America does have a gun problem because this was a ban against assault weapons and things of that nature.
but there will be no assault weapons ban passed through the Congress of the United States, and apparently there will be no no background check law passed through the Congress of the United States.
Well,
and bloody right. And bloody
being
Mingo
right.
goes on being bloody.
Well, being all right, he has a lot of money.
And a lot of right, and a lot of pet congressmen.
And a little hush money does a lot of talking. That's the way it is. You know, in this country, he who has the gold makes the rule. And that goes for not only guns, it goes for oil, it goes for coal, it goes for everything like that. I mean, you know, it's very hard to fight established organisms of that nature, or well, that's what they are. They are organisms, as well as being, you know, corporate entities. It's very hard to fight people like that who have that kind of money. I mean, if you have the money, you can win. But if you don't, you will not. And it's very doubtful. I mean, these people just have, you know, K Street, Wall Street, and Back Street. They've got it all sewn up. And we've got a Congress that's already now, there was an article about how congressmen are not paid enough. And they were saying in the article that I saw on the internet a couple of days ago that each congressman should receive at least to keep him in line with the inflation and this, that, and the other, should receive a minimum raise of $42,000 a year.
Well, you know what, Jim? I'll go so far as to say that I would be okay with tripling a congressman's salary if we could pass a law that said they were not allowed to take so much as one thin dime from an external source.
Well, I can't. Well, they can. I mean, for example, look at DeMint.
Oh, no. I understand that. That's what I'm saying. I quadruple their salary if we can pass a law that says they cannot take money from outside sources.
Oh, I know, but they can, and they do, and they will continue.
Then we ought to cut their pay in half.
Well, DeMint, I mean.
That are just sew NASCAR patches on them. And cancel their salaries altogether and just let corporate America pay their damn salaries.
Well, that'd be an idea. I mean, look at what DeMint did. I mean, he left his job to head the Heritage Foundation, and he sextupled his salary. He's making over $1 million a year now.
Yeah.
That's the way Washington is. It's a pathway to access and excess. And that's what we have representing us. And that's the reason you're not going to have a lot of, well, in my opinion, a lot of positive reaction from some of these people. That's just the way they are. And that's the way the system is. And I really don't see it changing anytime soon. Because, I mean, you know, who's going to want to kill the goose that lays the golden egg?
Well, there are some who have. I remember when Bob Graham somewhat moderate Democratic Senator, Fritz Hollings from South Carolina.
Used to play tennis with him at the Senate Racket Court.
They both got out of the Senate because they said they were sick of spending all of their time fundraising.
That sounds like Fritz. He's a Senate graduate. You know, he had this thing, who's the guy that, oh, God, who wears the hairpiece on one of these talk shows?
Oh, Jesus, I don't know.
Oh, Sam Donaldson.
Oh, he hadn't been on TV in a while, has he?
I guess not. But anyway, Sam Donaldson got into it with Fritz about... he was talking about how Fritz went to a special tailor in downtown D.C., very exclusive. Of course, he could afford it. I mean, why not do it? And Fritz just came back and he said, you know, that shop is just right next to where he has his toupee made.
God bless him.
He did. And I remember when I was like a junior at the Citadel or a sophomore at the Citadel, this was during the summer, and I was a counselor at the boys' summer camp down there. And I taught archery there, and it was next to the racquet court. And Fritz would yell over, "Want to bounce the balls?" And so I'd have to go over there, and I'd say, "Yes, sir." And he and my dad were classmates at the Citadel. I knew old Fritz pretty well. He had that I loved his accent. Didn't love all of what he said, but he was a nice fella and enjoyed his company. And so that's my contribution for the evening.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll take Fritz Hollings over Jim Demented or...
Oh, God, I mean, Jim Demented.
Or Lindsey Graham Cracker.
Oh, yeah, I mean, Fritz was he was a good guy in many respects. In some respects, not. But nonetheless, it's gotten a lot worse than it used to be.
Indeed. Jim, have yourself a good evening.
Same to you, sir. Good night.
All right, bye now. Calling from not too awfully far from here, that's our buddy Jim. And onward we go. It's about a minute past 8 p.m. here on the East Coast, past 5 in the Pacific time zone. And the lines are open, 304-658-3333. Let's make up for a little bit of lost time given what didn't happen last night, i.e. a show. And a little note, the PayPal button still works if you care to use it. We certainly care if you care to use it, because that's how we stay on the air. We are at $10 for the evening, and much appreciative for that. And it would be mighty nice if we could get up a little closer to 150. So that's only 14 folks at 10 bucks apiece, or 28 at 5, or 7 at 20. Yeah, the math on the fly thing with me. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, is it me?
Yes.
Okay, Lib in South Carolina.
Oh, hey, what's happening, Lib?
How are you doing?
I'm hanging on to some tenuously attached sanity.
Oh my God, I have Windows 8 and it sucks so bad. It's terrible.
The misery loves company. And
oh, man.
I'm glad it's not just me.
No. I mean, just to get the damn thing to start working, you got to jump through hoops. And it's like, just...
Well, when I found out what I had to do to restart the damn thing so it would keep loading updates...
I can only imagine.
I thought I was going to have to start drawing incantations in the air.
Yeah. Yeah. It's about that bad. And... frustrating, and it's not designed for people like us that just want to get something done.
Well, it is. It strikes me as certainly not being done, designed for anybody who actually wants to do meaningful work with media.
Right. Absolutely. It's basically designed for idiots, as far as I can tell. But
in the course of my casting about, you know, typing search phrases like "where's the effing start button,"
right,
and "where's the GD control panel," because at that point I that doesn't happen to me very often, Lib. From time to that I'll actually just type profanity into a search query.
Right.
But in this case, I wanted to contribute a little bit to the zeitgeist, I guess, and just wondered, because lo and behold, I started typing, "where is the goddamn start?" And it said button on Windows 8. And I knew, it filled in the rest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I ran across a video that said, "watch a 3-year-old use Windows 8. And I thought, well, that makes...
I cannot get mine to print. I'm trying to do my taxes. The only time in the year that I ever use a printer, because I just don't print anything. But it took me a week to figure out that, you have to turn on the printer, get it to recognize the computer, and they start to talk each other, and still it doesn't work. It's a terrible thing, but going back four subjects, Did you know that Phil Ramone died last week?
No.
Yeah.
The last of the Ramones?
No, Phil Ramone, record producer.
Oh, no, no. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Google Phil Ramone. He was best friends with Karen Carpenter.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was. I hear Ramone, and I immediately start thinking,
yeah,
hey-ho, let's go.
Yeah, well, I actually met the man about 20 years ago. He was doing a seminar for audio technicians, and back then he was talking about sitting in his basement with a T1 line, and Gloria Estefan was out on the road, and she would stop into a recording studio at 2 o'clock in the morning after she got off work and play a mix over the T1 line, and he would be going, okay, on the bridge, bring up the guitar, 3 dB, I need more bass drum, sweeten the bass guitar a little bit more high end, and he was doing this from his studio across the country. That was 20 years ago. And all of us, you know, military audio technicians were sitting there with our jaws on the ground.
I had no idea that he was behind the recording of Marilyn Monroe singing Happy Birthday to President Kennedy.
That's a new one to me.
Yeah.
But it doesn't surprise me a bit.
Yeah, and he, you know, he lived to the age of 79.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I met him 14 years ago.
14 Grammys.
Yeah. I got to share a cup of coffee with him during intermission, and I walked away going, damn, I have 100 more questions. You know? The guy was incredible. He was absolutely incredible, and just the chance to be able to meet him and spend a couple hours with him, it was awesome. So I'm glad that we now know he's no longer with us, but a sad passing.
You know, especially in light of the fact that he'd gone in to have an aortic aneurysm fixed and then got pneumonia in the hospital.
Yeah.
Hospital's a terrible place to be sick.
Tell me about it. I've got to go back to the VA this month. Good nurses, for the most part. They actually assign me a primary care guy. He's mine. He's great. The specialists, they're assholes.
In the room just long enough to, not even long enough to read their name on their coat before they're gone.
Oh, God. My cardiologist put his stethoscope on top of my sweater to listen to my heart. What a freaking bozo.
Yeah, brother.
Yeah. In other news, did you hear about North Carolina?
Oh, yeah, I got that. It's
Oh, my God. These people, you know, they want to establish a state religion. But luckily down here in South Carolina, we've got Sandfraud is going to go against. Oh, that's what we call him. You know, he's going to be against
Mark. Colbert. Don't feed the strays, Sandfraud.
Yeah, C Street He was living in the C Street house before Demented was. No wonder he was running around on his wife. That place was a house of ill repute. You know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it was. Makes me want to wander around and go find it, because I think it's not too far from the AK headquarters.
Please do. You know, isn't it a brothel now? I don't, you know.
What do you mean now?
Well, yeah. Oh, my God.
It was a brothel for Jesus.
That's where Ensign lived. What didn't Bitter live there for a while?
Yeah. I think he lives in our building now.
Well, my God. Oh, my God.
He's got some fabulous shiny orange satin gym shorts.
Oh, God. Do not send pictures, please. Anyways.
No, I'm just working up my courage one of these days walking and thinking, you know, we need to talk about the little hillbilly fetuses.
Just when you think it could not get any crazier, you know, they come out with people like this. Just freaking insane. But anyways, I'll let you go. I just had, you know, a few of those tidbits for you. I am rooting for Elizabeth Colbert.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you ought to get out and work on her campaign.
I've sent her money. I live way across state. But, like Stephen says, she's freaking sane. You know, why not vote for her? You know?
Well, but doesn't that make some presuppositions about voting majorities in South Carolina?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, doesn't vote for like? Because that's the only way I can explain the persistent office holding of people like Steve King of Iowa and 1L Michelle Bachman of Minnesota.
Louis Gohmert.
Oh, I mean, that's Texas.
Oh,
but,
God. I know. I mean, where the hell did they come up with these people?
And now we've got I don't know if you've seen this, but now we've got an anointed new darling boy of the libertarians.
Oh, yeah. I've been all over that shit on Facebook.
Yeah. Justin Amash.
Oh, no, no. I thought you were talking about the doctor from, John Hopkins?
No. This guy's already in Congress. He is only 32 years old, and he has anointed himself as the new Ron Paul.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. And he's proven it, because he says he believes in limited government, and he's opposed to the Defense of Marriage Act, but he wants to ban abortion within 3 days of conception, because he believes in limited government. And I guess by limited government, he means government that can limit the rights of other people.
Right. Yeah. There are certain people that really do need to have their balls removed. You know?
Or a brain implanted, either one. I'm okay.
Yeah. One or the other, but just, it doesn't get any, you know, the insanity that ensues. It is just mind-boggling to me. But anyways, I'm out of things to talk about. You keep up the good work.
I will certainly try, Lib. I appreciate it.
Yeah, try to keep your hair. Okay.
You mean what's left of it?
Yeah, we are follically challenged.
Well, that's why I've been letting it grow lately. I'm going to go for one of those great big televangelist comb overs eventually.
I'm growing my ponytail, but eventually we'll have a little bit to send to Locks of Love. But,
all right. Well, Lib, you have yourself a good evening. I do. I appreciate the call.
Yeah. Be well.
All right. Thanks. Take care.
Bye.
Bye. Lib in South Carolina, and we go onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Lib?
Hey.
Hold on, it's Jeremy.
Hey, Jeremy. What's up, man?
Sorry to hear you. I dislike Windows 8 so much. Really doesn't seem so bad to me. I've had it for about 4 months now, and I'm getting used to it.
Well, for me, I can get used to having to do new tricks in order to do things that I'm used to doing in a different way. That's not a problem. But when it becomes functionally impossible to do the things that I have to do in order to get this show out, then that's a bad thing.
Yeah, I can see how that could be a bad thing. When I first got this computer, right, I just and with the old internet, I had to get back on whatever it locked up on you. Like I said, I think the biggest problem people tend to have with the biggest freak out at first is the fact that if you swipe left or right too fast, you jump from any programmer in back to that stupid tile wall.
Well, and frankly, the tile wall, why couldn't they make a mobile version or something? This has absolutely no meaning to me.
It's because they, just like everyone else, they see things going mobile. So it really is meant so that eventually people will all use their mobile devices and it'll be synced to this and synced to that. I really think they think they're going to corner like the Apple market type thing and everyone's going to switch from their iPhone to Windows 8 phone. I heard from the conception a Windows phone is the worst thing you can buy. They're very unstable, like Internet Explorer used to be, various different things. So I'll never have one.
Oh, you couldn't give me a Windows phone.
I am no
fan of Apple or Steven Jobs.
Neither am I. I have a Droid, so I think the icons and the tiles thing maybe flows a little better with me because swiping back and forth Windows.
Well, I'm convinced that Windows 8 is supposed to remind people of Android.
I think it is, but I think it was also designed to work on their new tablet they've been advertising with a stupid detachable keyboard. That's what I've heard.
Yeah.
And that's the point for the sliding back and forth type thing. And then, yes, they're modeling after Android more than even an Apple phone. What else was I going to say? Can't think of... Oh, in terms of programs, I told you before I'm a gamer.
Yeah.
I went out 2 weeks ago, and I bought the new SimCity about the geekiest game you can find. And to my horror, when I went to first buy it, they said, you realize you have to be connected to the internet the whole time to play that game, right? I said, what, you can't play off? No, there's no more offline modes. You have to play connected to the internet the whole time. Not just that, everything you do is through the cloud now. There's no saving things to your own computer. It's all through them. And again, it's a platform where they're seeing everything going online, going mobile. So that when you buy the game, you don't really, I don't think you really install the game. You get a download version of it, and then you play it from
there. Well, this is an ongoing manifestation of the whole nasty business of licensing instead of property ownership rights.
Right, and that's the, I forget what, a while ago, I know a lot of people complained about this, so eventually Steve Jobs and Apple saw it the public way. A long time, not too long ago, there was a time when you bought something from iTunes or something. If you lost it, you freaking lost it. You didn't get it back.
Yeah.
I know through lots of protesting and this and that, and people threatening to boycott them, now there's an ability to download things so many times every 60 days, and you can keep them forever. I know that was changed, but for a long time, if you deleted something by accident, well, screw you, buy it again. You can't give it to you again. And they're awful hard about returning things, too. If you happen to click the auto buy one thing too many times or too fastly. I was told one time it was a one-time deal and they wouldn't do it in the future. I'm like, okay. So they were nice about it that time, but they warned me they'd never do it again.
Well, that's a sure path to you will know. So was my business a one-time deal.
Right, exactly. And I haven't really done a lot of iTunes since then. Like I said, I switched to Android, which is a little bit better in my mind anyway. But, yeah, like I was saying, I notice a lot of things are going to not – and Microsoft has always been bad at the licensing thing from the get-go. I mean, they're no stranger to doing that. I remember a point when the Windows 95 days, I remember that operating system, and that was a horror for a while, too.
Yeah, that was and before that was Windows for Warehouses.
Right.
3.11.
I remember 3.11 when I had a 300 megabytes, and I never thought I'd fill it. And then, 6 years later here, I was using 1,000 gigabytes, no problem. But I remember with Windows 95, it might have been Windows 98, the first version I got of it, you only were allowed so many installs from your disk. So if you had a virus problem from, say, malicious software from going to some nasty site, and you had to install more than X amount of times, you had to buy a new CD.
Right.
Or buy a new licensing on, which is the same idea. Which all seemed kind of a weird thing to me, seeing that every computer at the time shipped with it, you had no choice but to use that program.
Well, and that's where you're over a barrel. I mean, that's the barrel I was over last night. $199 for Windows 7 or $119 for 8.
Right. I can appreciate that. Trust me. I realize that. I mean, I think I was going to buy Windows 8 originally. I'm kind of glad I guess probably didn't buy it. I was forced into it because my laptop died. And then it's bought a small, it's not a tablet, but it's more like a netbook. It's still a laptop, just a smaller condensed version of one. It does all the same thing.
Well, I tell you what I'm hearing this evening, Jeremy, that disturbs me more than anything is this idea that eventually we're all going to be working on tablets and mobile devices. I won't type more than 5 sentences on a tablet or a mobile device. If I've got to do some serious writing or any kind of serious work on a computer, I'm either on a laptop with a decent keyboard, or I'm on this thing back here, which is a real live, honest to God desktop.
And that makes perfect sense to me. I know that when I send various people emails during the night, it's hard to tell on my phone because you can hit the right key you want to hit, but you're always going to get that letter next to it. And that happens at least 4 times out of 5 in a sentence I'm typing. I'll hit at least 2 letters, which I inadvertently didn't mean to do. Gotten a lot better at it, but I do find the virtual keyboard quite irritating.
Oh, well, it's just not wide enough.
Yeah, it doesn't fit your finger, so, I mean, yeah, there's that. And I know there's a video going around, and it's been, a lot of people have fallen for it. It's a conceptual video more than anything else. It's the new, supposed to be the new iPhone 6 with a projector built into it. It looks like you can type. That's not real.
No.
In that video, that's a fraud. People are falling for it. It's just some artist rendition of what they want to do. But that technology is, I guarantee you, years out to be able to do something like that. That was almost pushing Star Trek type things in my mindset, that the keyboard is a little white pad on your own table. It's not going to happen.
No, I don't think so.
At least not for the foreseeable future.
But I guess what I was told earlier may be the truth, that eventually people who insist on working on desktops will be migrated over to Windows Server.
I've heard that.
So
I really think in the end, it's really a ploy to control the consumer market in terms of knowing what you do and how you do it. The fact that, like you were saying earlier, now with Windows, there are no longer programs, it's the App Store, where you have to actually validate some sort of a payment card. They have all the information. I mean, therefore, they have your street address, your full name, everything down to your Social Security number, and then they can see what you bought in the past. So at some point, when they, and this is getting conspiracy land, but I know it's probably going to happen, with this Windows platform, at some point you're going to start getting advertising sent to you just like the Internet used to do to you based on what you bought in the past, and that's what you're going to see in your program windows and in some of those buyers that come up as flash windows now.
Well, I've still got a ton of loading to do, and I've got to find a bunch of stuff, and I don't know where it is. It's deeply frustrating.
Well, I was going to say, if you got my email earlier, I sent you the preacher. He is at your desktop right now.
Yes, I've got him. So we've at least got him, you know, going forward. Of course, I'll be in Washington, D.C. next Wednesday.
But that's basically all I had to say. I'm sorry to hear it's getting fit, but it gets better. That call, the email from before, I didn't write about
it. What Jay said, yeah, it gets better.
Exactly. It does get better after a while. It's frustrating at first. Trust me,
after I've been bullied by Microsoft for 20 years, it gets better.
Yeah,
Jeremy, have yourself a good evening.
Thanks, bud.
All right, bye now.
Bye.
From Vermont, that's our buddy Jeremy. It is about 26 minutes, and lo and behold, the computer's keeping good time. See, I knew. You have no idea why it was we had to eventually, me and that mouse in my pocket, you have no idea why it was that I had to finally bite the bullet and do this. The thing was just a mess. But it's still 17 shades of unpleasant. And there's more than, it's more than just, you know, some cranky 50-year-old carping about an operating system. It is, as Jeremy points out, it's got to do with, and as Andy pointed out in his email as well, it has to do with the way that the corporate world treats the people who buy their crap now. You don't like it? Too bad. It's all there is. It's become one big Hobson's choice. You can have the horse by the door or no horse at all. Right. Some choice. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello.
Oh, this is Edward.
Hey, Edward.
You shocked me. I got you so quickly. Anyway, I have a question for you. A friend of mine in North Carolina called me this afternoon, and the state legislature, or whatever they call themselves, have gone completely crazy, and they are even proposing that North Carolina have its own religion.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. And also, they are saying that any of the federal laws or regulations, if they don't like them, they don't have to follow them. What is the term for that? I'm having a moment.
Edward, that is nullification.
Nullification. Thank you. Bless your heart. Nullification. Well, that's what they're trying to do. Oh, Lord, I'm ashamed anymore to tell anybody I'm from Texas or North Carolina. My goodness.
For a lot of us, it's getting that way. Imagine living in West Virginia.
Oh, me. Well, how about North Carolina having their own religion? I asked him, I said, what are they going to do, elect the Pope? He didn't know.
Well, you know, it was our buddy Reverbo who used to talk about the possum goddess.
Well, they would have lots of those in North Carolina. I know, because I've seen them.
I'm told they're delicious with sweet taters.
Oh, dear. No, thank you. No, thank you. I'd eat a possum just as quick as I'd eat an armadillo. And I'm not about to do that.
And that's not right.
Mm. Oh, dear. Well, Rick Perry is showing his backside to the world, and
yeah. What is this? Explain this to me, Edward. North Korea wants to blow up Texas.
Well, I don't know. He's probably going to nuke North Korea. Who knows? The man has problems.
Here's the quote, and try not to just devolve into gales of laughter, Edward. This is what Rick Perry and why any for-profit media outlet, let alone CBS This Morning, interviewed him. I don't know if the booker for this program just lives with a bottle of scotch under her pillow or what. Here's what CBS this morning actually contacted Rick Perry to get him on the program to talk about North Korea's threat to Texas.
I haven't heard that.
Yeah. So here's what he said.
Tell me what he said.
What I will suggest to you is that one of the reasons that Austin is put on the map, and by the map he means a map that North Korea has put out of places they'd like to target with nuclear weapons, and Austin is on it. What I will suggest to you is that one of the reasons that Austin is put on the map is that he put very important American cities on the map. Economically, what has happened in Texas over the course of the last decade has made this city an epicenter for a lot of technology and a lot of economic development. And I think the individuals in North Korea understand that Austin, Texas, is now a very important city in America, as do corporate CEOs and other people who are moving here in record number. Dadgum, I never thought I'd see the day when I thought George W. Bush turned out to be the smart one.
How about it? Well, they got a lot of bluegrass singers there. Maybe he's after them.
Maybe he wants to nuke South by Southwest.
Well,
you know, SXSW.
The Johnson Library. That's there. Well, it, Austin does have a lot of industry there and a lot of brain power, but I don't think...
Well, Rick Perry ain't no brain power, Edward.
No, he's not. Absolutely not. He is like Jim Hightower said about Dan Quayle. He said Dan Quayle is so dumb, he thinks that Cheerios are... donut seed. John Hightower said that about it. And I think our one and only governor just fits into that shoe very comfortably. And it's not a glass slipper either, let me tell you.
I think Rick Perry just needs to lay off the hydrocodones for a while.
Oh, my. Well, I tell you, I don't know what's wrong with North Carolina. Yeah, they decided that if they don't agree with a law or a regulation of the United States of America, they are just not going to do it. So there.
Glory.
Yes, they're going to stomp their little foot and say, I ain't going to do it.
We've been down this road before.
Oh, I know. What a world.
Indeed.
Yeah, well, take care, and thank you. Like I said, I was having one of my senior moments. My friend in North Carolina was, too, and we couldn't think of the word nullification.
It's there, and it is sure enough what that is.
Well, thank you so much, and you take care of yourself, and be careful in Washington, D.C. the next 3 weeks.
Well, I sure will, Edward, for a variety of reasons.
Yeah, well, I've been around Washington, D.C. years ago, so... You have to watch out.
Yes, you do. You take care, Edward. Have a good night.
You do, too.
Bye now. Edward calling from Dallas and raising a good point and something that I had wanted to get into anyway. And what with it being prayer meeting Wednesday and all. I love you. There, okay. I did it. I did the voice. Heh. Okay. It's now prayer meeting Wednesday. By now, you're bound to know the story. Out of North Carolina, a bill has been introduced in the North Carolina legislature, which is, of course, dominated by Republicans. And it allows... Why? What engendered this response? Okay, we got to go back to 2009. Forsyth County Board of Commissioners was found by a court of competent jurisdiction to have violated the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment, you know, Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion or restricting the free practice thereof. That's pretty close, isn't it? I had all this stuff memorized once upon a time, but so the ACLU sued Forsyth County's Board of Commissioners, because they were using sectarian prayers to open their official meetings. And one may safely surmise that Forsyth County, North Carolina, probably has some folks who aren't Christian in it. Might even have some folks who are Jewish in it. Might have some folks who are Muslim in it. Might have some atheists in it. And Magistrate Judge Trevor Sharp made a finding that the prayers opening up the Forsyth County Board of Commissioners, quote, display a preference for Christianity over other religions by the government, and doing so alienates those whose beliefs differ from Christian beliefs and divides citizens along religious lines. That was 2009. Well, the good, upstanding, God-fearing members of the Republican Party who hold the majority in North Carolina have been head up about it ever since. And so they done introduced themselves a bill in the North Carolina legislature. The bill was introduced by representatives Harry Warren and Carl Ford. It's called House Bill 494. Nine other House members have jumped in for the introduction of the bill. And the bill declares the sovereignty of the state of North Carolina, and that any ruling by a court on matters of religion is null and void because North Carolina is sovereign. And it's not because Forsyth County was just slapped down a rat hole. This case went all the way up to the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, the Fourth Circuit. And they didn't ban the prayers. They just said that prayers that favored one religion over another, for instance, dear Jesus, the one and only Savior of humanity, the only way we can get to heaven and know and understand that you is the only way we can get to heaven and not them heathen Buddhists, nor those Christ-killing Jews, nor them heathen Muslim infidel Islams, nor your Buddhists, nor your spirit worshipers. Oh, Jesus, thank ye and pass your blessings upon this here meeting of the Forsyth County Board of Commissioners. Ha! That is the kind of prayer that is forbidden. A nice, generic, okay, to the extent a prayer can be nice. A nice generic prayer that says something like, oh, I don't know, bestow thy wisdom upon our naked heads or something. Yeah, that kind of crap. But it ain't good enough. It is not good enough to suit the fine, upstanding, God-fearing members of the Republican Party in the North Carolina legislature. And so they have declared, let me see if I got the, yeah, I think I do. Let me see if I got the body of the, yeah, here it is. I'll have it in a minute here. Oh, shit, it's opened up a new tile. HJR-494, entered April 1st, 2013. House Principal Clerk, no, this is not an April Fool's joke. Let's get reading. Whereas the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment of the Constitution of the United States reads, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting free exercise thereof, and whereas this prohibition does not apply to states, municipalities, or schools, that's line six. We're going to want to come back to line six. Whereas, in recent times, the federal judiciary has incorporated states, municipalities, and schools into the Establishment Clause prohibition on Congress, and whereas the 10th Amendment to the United States Constitution reads, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. And whereas the 10th Amendment of the Constitution of the United States prohibits the federal government and prohibits the federal courts from expanding the powers of the federal government beyond those powers which are explicitly enumerated. And whereas the Constitution of the United States does not grant the federal government and does not grant the federal courts the power to determine what is or is not constitutional, therefore, by virtue of the 10th Amendment to the Constitution of the United States, the power to determine constitutionality and the proper interpretation and proper application of the Constitution is reserved unto the states and to the people. And whereas each state in the Union is sovereign and may independently determine how that state may make laws respecting an establishment of religion, and whereas Round County, North Carolina, or perhaps Rowan, asserts that the protections afforded to citizens of the new United States under the First Amendment are not in any way to be abridged when such citizens become government actors by virtue of their, because they only acting, they ain't doing it for real, of their appointment, election, contract, employment, or otherwise engagement, and whereas Rowan County, North Carolina, requests and encourages the North Carolina General Assembly to pass a resolution declaring that the state of North Carolina does not recognize the authority of federal judicial opinions arising from the exertion of powers not granted to the federal government by the Constitution of the new United States, now therefore, be it resolved by the House of Representatives, the Senate concurring, the North Carolina General Assembly asserts that the Constitution of the United States in America does not prohibit states or their subsidiaries from making laws respecting an establishment of religion. And Section 2, the North Carolina General Assembly does not recognize federal court rulings which prohibit and otherwise regulate the state of North Carolina, its public schools, or any political subdivisions of the state from making laws respecting an establishment of religion. You got all that? Yeah. What did I say about line six? Whereas the prohibition does not apply to states, municipalities, or schools. Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. Just because you don't like the 14th Amendment does not mean the 14th Amendment does not exist. Because, you see, up until that little dust-up that started in 1861... and up until the passage of the 13th and 14th Amendments, it was understood that the Bill of Rights did not, in fact, extend, of which the First Amendment is a part, did not extend to the states. That's another one of those drafting failures that very, very smart men who drafted the Constitution made. But as of the passage of the 13th and 14th Amendment, and particularly the 14th Amendment, the Bill of Rights, including the First Amendment, expressly is applied to the states, to municipalities, and to schools. And that line in line, that remark in line 7, whereas in recent times the federal judiciary has incorporated states, municipalities, and schools into the Establishment Clause prohibitions on Congress. You know, recently. Recent times. Like 1867. I'm telling you, the Civil War was just yesterday. In places like North Carolina. This is, as Edward noted, in fact, a rank and disgusting manifestation of nullification. Jim, noting via email, the 14th Amendment exists and is the law of the land, period. Jim, if you wish, and I'm not being a smartass here, you are welcome to go down to North Carolina and explain that to the Republican members of the North Carolina legislature and see how far your explanation gets you. Now, I don't want to start hollering into the microphone because there's no point to it. We don't need to holler at each other. But great googly moogly. What more does it take? Because I've been talking about this a right smart bit lately. What more does it take before people understand and start spreading the word that we are in the middle of, not on the verge of starting, or at the tail end of, we are smack dab in the middle of a cold civil war. Just like what happened between 1946 and the fall of the Soviet Union was known as the Cold War between the United States and the Soviet Union, we are in the midst of a cold civil war in the United States of America. The Confederacy, such as it was, grudgingly admitted defeat. Or I should say grudgingly surrendered, but never admitted defeat. It must be understood that what we're dealing with here, as enacted by the North, as proposed by these 11 members of the House of Representatives of the state of North Carolina, is an act of treason. That bill is treasonous. Because you say that you will not act according to the Constitution of the United States and the settled law interpreting it. You are engaged at that point in time in a state of hostility with the United States of America. Nullification, arguments of nullification, are treasonous. I don't throw that word around as a matter of course or happenstance. People listening to this program and observing this country from outside its borders need to understand that this country is on the verge of tearing itself apart in a cold civil war. Outside isolated incidents in which pillheads, blow-away sheriffs, or pissed-off fascist right-wingers well, pissed off fascist white wingers blow away prosecutors, there's not going to be any gunplay in a cold civil war. This is something to which the South and the Republican Party have been building up for more than a generation. They are hateful, they are bigoted, but they are not stupid. And that's why we spent 20 or 30 years hearing them complain about activist judges legislating from the bench. Because ultimately, they knew they would win this cold civil war from the bench. And now, they have just the Supreme Court to do it. You want to put down a fin on how Fat Tony Scalia would rule on this? Or Slappy Thomas? Or Alito? Or Kennedy? Or Dead-Eyed John Roberts? Because right there is the 5 votes you need. I mean, this is not the sharpest legal reasoning I've ever run across to argue that the 10th Amendment trumps the First. The 10th Amendment proves that the 14th is not applicable, even though it's been. See, this goes all the way to the grounds of government. That's what nullification does. This assaults the principle set forth in Marbury versus Madison that says that the Supreme Court shall be the final arbiter of what the Constitution means in the United States of America. This is a salvo in a cold civil war. And whether the nullification has to do with firearms or abortion or immigration or religion, or any other thing, the purpose of it is to finally get a win. Because all they have to do is win on one nullification issue, and everything falls apart. These neo-Confederates do not, we must understand all the way down to our toenails, do not wish to any longer be a part of the Union. Do not wish to be a part any longer of the United States of America, except to the extent that the United States of America agrees to write them checks that won't bounce and demand nothing in return. You're going to see it more and more and more. And eventually, if you throw enough bubblegum at the wall, one wad is going to stick. And that's all it takes, is one. The longer we persist in failing to comprehend that we are in the midst of a cold civil war, the more likely it is that one of these will stick. I remember Isaac calling in a couple of weeks ago talking about how screwed up North Carolina can be. You wonder why. And Ron in Raleigh, just before showtime, with another observation. Asking, may I offer up an imprecatory prayer? Why, yes, Ron, yes. I recently sent an email Ron says, in which I indicated that one should keep an eye on North Carolina. The latest outrage from our newly minted Ulrich-Republican legislature is criminal background checks for all seeking state or federal food assistance, not office. The reasoning is that it will protect the integrity of the program. I imagine this is the same sort of protection that photo IDs give the voting process. I've said in the past that Republicans have found that sweet spot in the American psyche of selfishness, venality, mendacity, and just plain meanness. We are just 3 months and a couple of days into the new legislature, and these swine are running the complete ALEC playbook. The difference between the national news and that other states received when this took place in Wisconsin or Michigan is that here in North Carolina, we're used to powers, the powers that be, crapping all over the poor. Once again, keep your eye on North Carolina. The bad news is just starting up. Next, fracking and deep well injections of wastewater. May their days be short. May the teeth break off in their heads. Yada, 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 says Ron in Raleigh. Amen, Brother Ron. Amen. But there is nothing new in any of this. Not a damn bit of it. It is only because we weren't around for the last time this little dog and pony show came to town that anybody thinks it is. And I'm not seeing anybody refer to this as a cold civil war except me. And I don't, just as with treason, I don't use the term lightly. So give it some thought. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But if I'm right, as Hunter Thompson said, the hogs are in the tunnel and they will travel on a road of bones. I'm awful tickled we were able to get to the air tonight. We were able to engage in our little nightly conversation. I'll try to make it better, try to get some stuff working, a little more stuff working by tomorrow. Thank you for everything you do, including keeping this on the air. This has been a slow evening with only one contribution coming in. And every night we have one of these nights makes it a little less likely that there will be a next month. And it's going to get extra hard because I've got to be in D.C. because the only people doing this work right now are my buddy Bo, my colleague Bo, and me. And I'm not going to leave Bo to shoulder the load alone. There will be shows from D.C. But nights like this, when no support comes in, make it very hard to say that there will be a horn in May. And I hate to even say that. But thanks to all of you for your time, your contributions, your emails, your phone calls, your participation in the chat room, thank you. Because your finite time is the most valuable thing that you share. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy, who tells me she's playing hooky to listen to her first Yankees game of the year, in the chat room. Thanks to our news.